And I'm going to call the meeting to order and turn to Secretary Fletcher.
Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the October 2024 Board of Trustees meeting. Today's agenda is filled with several different action items of university business. There are also a lengthy speakers list for this morning, including those who have come for public participation. Just as a framework up front here, in the event of a disruption that prevents the board from conducting business or members of the public from hearing or observing the meeting will be recessed or adjourned. If the meeting is recessed, the board will meet via Zoom within 10 minutes of that recess occurring, and regrettably, there would be no opportunity for public comment at that stage. So, President, back over to you.
Great, thank you. I'm going to ask for if there's a motion to approve the agenda for today.
So moved.
Support. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. I'd like to ask if there's a motion to approve the minutes from the September 6th meeting.
So moved.
Support.
Support. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes. Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to our new boardroom, and I want to take the opportunity to thank all of those who helped to make this possible. It's been over 20 years since the boardroom had been refreshed, and so I hope that that everybody enjoys the new confines of the boardroom, and I want to thank again all those who made this possible. I want to just start by saying that many of you here today are aware of the passing of MSU Board Chair Emeritus Joel Ferguson last Saturday. And as I said in a joint statement with Chairperson Kelly and Athletics Director Alan Haller, Joel was a true champion for our great university. He earned his degree here and served on the board for more than 30 years. He advocated for improved access for underrepresented students, worked with those he didn't always agree with to advance the university, and was a strong supporter of Michigan State University athletics. He was a civil rights leader, a successful business person and community leader, and a strong proponent for the Lansing area. His legacy will be strong and everlasting on our Spartan community. I'd like us to pause now for a moment of silence, which I'll offer members of the board an opportunity to offer their personal reflections. Thank you. Members of the board.
Well, I'll start with just a couple of quick comments. There's lots of stories involving Joel. All funny and all good. But when I came on, I served with Joel for 4 years. When I came on the board, nobody could have been more gracious and just a good friend to have on the board for both myself and my wife, both he and Anna. So I'll miss him. He was a good guy and a class act.
I'll jump in if that's okay. So when I joined the board, I didn't have as long of a time to experience working with Joel Ferguson as some of my colleagues on the board. When I joined in 2019, I knew a lot about Michigan State University, but I hadn't come to the board the same way all of my colleagues had at that point in time. They were all elected to their positions, and I was appointed by Governor Whitmer. And so I knew about Michigan State University, having been on the law faculty for a decade from 2006 to 2016. And I knew about higher ed administration from serving in other roles at different institutions. But I didn't know anything about politics. And if I'm really vulnerable with you right now, I will say I was experiencing a lot of imposter syndrome stepping up into that role. But the university was important to me, and I wanted to step into that service role. And so the story I will share about Joel is, for those that you know him, this won't surprise you, the first member of the Board of Trustees to reach out to me after the information was public about my appointment was indeed Joel Ferguson. And it wasn't an email. It wasn't a text. It was a phone call. And he's a man who understood the power of a personal phone call. And that phone call, he assured me that I did belong, that I would add value to the board. But the other thing he did is he told me he knew my husband. Now, you might be thinking, well, that's not so strange. I mean, I've lived in East Lansing for 20 years, raised kids here. Joel lived in Lansing much longer than that. But what you need to know is my husband doesn't live in Michigan. He lives in Texas. And that's a different story, how we make that work. But, of course, Joel knew him because that's the kind of person he was. And he knew him because when he was serving as chair, Wallace received an honorary doctorate at a university graduation. He had graduated from James Madison College. That education set him on a course where he would become the first African-American Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Texas. And so Joel met him in that context. But again, it wasn't just an official handshake at a graduation for Joel Ferguson. He made Wallace feel like family. And so when I joined the board, I felt like I belonged because of the experience I could bring to the board, but I also felt immediately like I was part of the family because Joel knew my family. I think that he would absolutely love to still be on this board serving under President Guskowitz's one team that's very much in the spirit of one family. But if I could leave you with anything, the most important memory to me is the power of actually picking up the speaking to someone one-on-one to really give them the confidence and a friendship that they need.
Thank you. I'll go. Sorry, were you going to go, Diane? I can go. So I guess I'm going to start mine off being funny like I usually am and just say I do recognize, as Renee said, that there is the power of a phone call. That's how my time with Joel began because he ignored my phone calls. I called him when I was campaigning, and everybody told me you got to meet Joel Ferguson. So someone gave me his number, and I called probably 20 times, and he refused to return my phone call. So when I finally got elected and met him, I said, why would you not talk to me? And he said, I'm old school. And I believe that whoever gave you my number should have told me that they gave you my number before you called me. But it's nice to meet you, and I'm so happy you won the election. That's how my introduction started off with Joel Ferguson. He was just a remarkable man, and I'm going to keep this short because I'll probably cry. And I asked for Kleenex to be up here today, and I don't see any. I'm going to keep this short, but I just have to say that Joel was a trustee when I was a student here, and I know Kelly says the same thing, which is just remarkable in and of itself that someone had that much longevity on this board that goes to show that the citizens of this state entrusted in him the abilities that he displayed while at MSU. But it also goes to show when you look at the fact that he was, I believe, voted in as board chair three times, Diane. It may have been four, but at least three times. And back at that time, we didn't just have the lone wolf Republican on the board. It was typically a split board at that time. And so that just showed the amount of respect that the people on the board had for him, the way that he conducted himself, the way that he treated everyone. There was not a person that I met as far as administration is concerned that ever had anything ill to say towards Joel. And I just am very grateful for the time that I got to spend with him. I was the recipient, and I know Dan was as well, of like the daily phone calls. He called me. I'd say, Joel, I'm in a trial. Okay. And then he called me right back an hour later, and I'm like, Joel, I'm working. But he always wanted to check in on you any time of the day, any time of the night. And he was really a mentor to me in so many ways and like a father to me in the way that was most important. The love that I had for him and that he had for me, I will cherish in every memory that I shared. So love you, Joel.
I'll go next. The last couple of days have been filled with Joel stories as the board has gathered and spent time together. Last night, we had the opportunity of going over for visitation, and so that was an important part of closure, I think, at least for me. When I think of Joel Ferguson, yes, a lot of it is time on the board, and of the current trustees serving, I served the longest with Joel, although there are former trustees that served many, many more years than I have. And towards the end of Joel's term, the last couple of years, you could see where his health was more in decline. And I think it showed up first with hearing issues. And it's like he was always kind of, you know, like a snap of the fingers trying to catch up just because of hearing difficulties. But there are so many wonderful stories about Joel because he loved this university. And Joel always wanted to do what was in the best interests of Michigan State. For me, because I grew up in this area, in the Ingham County community, I had known of Joel for many, many years. So for the greater Lansing community and the state of Michigan, I would argue, Joel was really an icon because he would show up as a community leader, the first African-American to serve on the Lansing City Council. He had run for higher office. He got extremely involved in national and presidential politics. He was a developer, and you can see his footprint or his handprints all over this community and across the state, frankly, on projects that he spearheaded. He was a mentor, though, to hundreds of young people, and he had a really soft spot in his heart for youth and helping them to develop into professional young men and women. Joel, you know, he always had a lot of advice to give everyone. He tended to be pretty long-winded and public comment, but he almost always left you with the final thought, and I believe it's still true to this day, and that he will say, our best days are ahead of us. And he would almost always end his public comment that way. And I think it's true. I think with our new president, Kevin Guskowitz, and the leadership of this board, the outstanding faculty and staff, and our bright students with just boundless opportunities, that the best days for Michigan State really do lie ahead. So thank you.
Anyone else?
I just want to make sure that I pay tribute to Joel Ferguson, Trustee Emeritus. He was an exemplar. He was funny, kind, business savvy, and powerful. Powerful. Someone to look up to for anyone at any age. And always sharp. Always a dresser. And the same calls that everyone else would get, I'd get them all the time. Oh, Joel, Mr. Ferguson, I'm on the plane. Okay. Well, call me later when you land. Okay. I'm still on the plane, Joel. I'm taking off, right? Okay, call me. I just had one idea. Okay, I'll call you back. He was hyper vigilant and diligent about MSU. He served his family. He served his friends. He served his state, and he served Spartans, and he will be missed.
Thank you.
So I'll just add my perspective here. To put it in perspective, when I got elected to the board, Joel Ferguson had literally been on the board my entire life. He was elected in 86, and I was born in 87. He signed both of my diplomas, and as sort of Renee said, being a younger member of the board, you do sort of feel that imposter syndrome. And I think one thing that Joel always did was treated my opinions with respect. And even though him and I didn't always agree on things, he respected the perspective that I brought to the table. And I will always appreciate and respect him for that. So he'll be missed.
What else? Okay, well, thank you. Well, I did not have the opportunity to get to know Joel Ferguson in the same way that so many of you in the room did today. I know that he would have been very proud of what we went out to do earlier this week. And so I want to continue today with some reflections on our inaugural Spartan bus tour, which took us to more than a dozen communities around parts of the Lower Peninsula on Monday through Wednesday. And it was a wonderful time to see the state in its autumn beauty and meet the people where they live and work. Those communities are the homes of many of our students and alums and where Michigan State's impact is felt daily through our research, education, and outreach. I want to thank all of those who worked so hard for several months planning the tour, and I also want to thank the more than 60 faculty members and administrators who joined us on the three-day tour, and also all the people who so warmly received us at each of the stops along the journey. Through the trip, we have a better understanding of the challenges, but more importantly, I think the opportunities in front of our fellow citizens and these communities. We learned about how we can bring our expertise from here in East Lansing out into these communities to help improve quality of life and to help drive the economy of Michigan. We started the tour on Monday at the Zibawing Center for Anishinaabe Culture and Lifeways in Mount Pleasant. There we toured a cultural museum and met with tribal council members, including Chief Tim Davis and tribal college leadership of the Saginaw Chippewa Indian Tribe, and shared a blanketing ceremony at our to celebrate our growing partnership, and have a beautiful blanket which was put on me, as you can see in the photograph here, and during that ceremony, and we just have to find the right place to display it, but it's beautiful, and that was one of the highlights of the trip for me. We ended the first day at Camp Grayling and Camp Wawasum in Grayling, Michigan, where we learned about our extension partnership with the Michigan National Guard, as well as some of the important work conducted in fisheries and wildlife. On Tuesday, we met with our geography and geological sciences researchers conducting important research on coastal erosion to protect Michigan's coastlines, and ended the day at the Muskegon Museum of Art, Trustee Scott's hometown, where we met the staff and talked about the importance of art and creative activities to a university and its community. At the museum, we toured the exhibits and met MSU faculty member and artist Teresa Dunn, who has an award-winning painting called All Yellow on display there. And I hope you have a chance to visit Muskegon. You go and check out all the artwork there, but in particular, Professor Teresa Dunn's work. It was incredible. The next morning, day three, we met with students and staff at Muskegon High School and learned more about the pre-college teaching programs offered there by our College of Education. It was clear to everyone that MSU is changing the lives of these students, in many ways probably changing the family trees of these students forever, and creating many opportunities for upward mobility while also helping to fill teacher workforce shortages in parts of the state. And among our final visits, we stopped at two vital MSU research facilities. We saw the Kellogg Biological Station, where important long-term environmental research is conducted by several of our researchers who inform farmers and environmentalists across the Midwest. And at our Grand Rapids Research Center, we met MSU faculty and physicians conducting groundbreaking medical research in cancer, women's health, neuroscience-related conditions such as Parkinson's disease, and other health conditions, and I'm really proud of the work that we're doing there as well. So I want to give you a brief visual summary of the tour. Our communications team is amazing, and they were able to fairly quickly put together this this video that I think you're going to enjoy, which can give you another perspective of those three incredible days that we just had. So if we can roll the video. I think we need to get the audio.
Kevin,
can imagine what everyone's saying here.
Yeah. I like that cake.
That's right. You want to re-roll it?
Play it at the end.
Okay, oh, that's fine. Yeah. Okay. Let me keep on rolling here, and we'll get it fixed. So at any rate, I think one of the things that you'll hear and see whenever the video is up and rolling, this is about connecting with the people of our state to strengthen partnerships while connecting with each other to build new collaborations. And I think there's a lot of that happened amongst those 60-plus individuals who were on the tour, sitting on the bus, sitting at breakfast, lunches, dinners together, and creating these amazing opportunities. But I'm optimistic that there will be new and interdisciplinary collegial relationships, as well as valuable research and service outcomes following this year's Spartan bus tour, and I look forward to growing and repeating the trip along new routes across Michigan in the years ahead. I've already had several emails and text messages saying, that's great that you went north and west, but when are you going to come east and northeast and southeast? And I said, next year, multiple buses, and I want to get as many people on future Spartan bus tours as possible. I'd like to wrap up by just highlighting a few of the initiatives that I announced at my presidential investiture and then say a little bit about Spartan Athletics. But I just want to thank the board and all those who participated or attended the investiture on September the 29th. We are now in the process of developing implementation plans for initiatives to attract and support our top talented students. And these are the ones we're working and expediting and moving most quickly on. But I announced that day the Joseph R. and Sarah L. Williams Scholarship, which will be a full-ride, merit-based scholarship with funded experiential education opportunities. And I'm proud to say that we're going to award 30 of these for the incoming class of 2025 and hope that through our capital campaign we'll be securing the funding that will allow us to invite many more into this prestigious merit-based scholarship program for the years for many years to come. I also announced our Native American Tuition Advantage Program. This will be an in-state. This will provide in-state tuition for those with tribal affiliation credentials, regardless of whether of where you live, living in Michigan or outside of Michigan, including Canada, and qualifying these students for in-state tuition and potentially qualifying them for the Spartan Tuition Advantage. We also announced that we're expanding our transfer capacity through our Envision Green program with $1 million grant in state aid from the state of Michigan as part of its 60 by 30 initiative. And this will include transfer student success centers with a campus transfer support center. So we're really excited to expand that. And we brought more students to Michigan this year through the transferring from community colleges than ever before, and we're going to continue to create that pathway for these students. The Lansing Made Bridge Program we announced, this is going to be similar to our Detroit Made Program, and it will support local high school graduates from the greater Lansing area to come to Michigan State University to have the experiential education opportunities that we know can be life-changing and career-changing for them. And then finally, our First Gen Center. This one has received a lot of attention, positive feedback, and this First Gen Center is going to allow us to build on our network, build on our work supporting first-generation students as a first-gen forward institution. So much more to come on these, and there were several other initiatives, but I wanted to just focus this on you know, how we're going to attract top talent and work hard to retain top talent students here at Michigan State University. And finally, with Spartan Athletics, I just want to say it's been an exciting season, and I've enjoyed getting out to many games to support our student athletes. I want to offer congratulations to several Spartans, starting with junior Ozan Barish. Ozan is the first Spartan men's tennis player to win the Intercollegiate Tennis Association Regional Singles Championship, and that happened recently right here at the MSU Indoor Tennis Center. Congratulations also to the MSU ice hockey program. It's going to be an exciting season for Spartan ice hockey. They recorded their 600th win at Munner Ice Arena with a victory over number 2 Boston College just about 10 days ago. The victory came as MSU celebrates the 50th anniversary of Munn Ice Arena this season. And then finally, how could we forget the incredible weekend that we had up in the UP? In Marquette, congratulations to men's basketball head coach Tom Izzo, who is part of the preseason matchup at his alma mater, Northern Michigan University, this month. He was honored with the retirement of his jersey number 10, and it was wonderful to be there in Marquette to help Tom and his family celebrate his personal homecoming in Marquette. And to wrap up, I'm looking forward to our groundbreaking later today for the new plant and environmental science building, which will open new opportunities for our faculty and students for research and educational excellence. And I'll just conclude with another reminder for everyone to exercise the most basic right under a democracy, which is to vote in the November 5th election. I sent an email yesterday reminding our campus community and offering a number of voting resources. So with that, we'll move along in the agenda. I don't know if we have the video ready to roll. I'm going to try it one more time. Here we go.
You have it ready to roll?
Yeah. I'm really excited about the opportunity to explore my home state and make some new connections in areas that I probably never would have the chance to before.
But we're going to see the impact that Michigan State University has as Michigan's state university.
I finally know what it means, what it feels like to be a Spartan. Because Spartans will be a source of strength, supportive in the mission, dreams, and future of all those who consider us home.
It's about uplifting communities, and this is just such a good example of how we are concretely doing this.
I think I just feel so much pride to be a part of a Spartan nation that connects all over the state, and even just to meet our colleagues and to see what inspiring work they're doing has just given me a renewed energy for my work and renewed passion.
It's been inspiring. The opportunity to build connection with community partners, getting to meet these students here, it's really why we do what we do, and it's a blessing to be a part of that.
These past few days have been so meaningful to learn much more about the state.
Yes.
All the things that MSU is doing, the impact that MSU is having, it's just absolutely incredible.
It's completely changed my view around my work. There are so many things that I have already documented that I want to take back to the university.
This has really made me exceedingly proud to be a Spartan because of the work that we are doing in collaboration with different communities in Michigan.
Thank you. So with that, I'm going to turn to Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, and I think we may actually hear from one of our bus tour participants.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Gage.
Thank you very much. Today's speaker is Dr. Angela Chia-Chen Chen. She's professor and the first McLaren Greater Lansing Endowed Chair for Behavioral Mental Health Nursing Education, and that is the first endowed chair in the college. She joined MSU last summer from Arizona State University and leads the college's efforts to, in partnership with clinical and community partners to develop strategic educational initiatives and innovative practice models aimed at enhancing inclusive and equitable behavioral health and well-being within the community. Dr. Chen holds a Bachelor of Science in Nursing from the National Taiwan University and earned a Master's of Science there as well. She received her PhD from the University of Washington in Seattle, and she's been recognized for her pioneering work in research and clinical expertise, and she's been inducted as a fellow of the American Academy of Nurse Practitioners. Her research focuses on promoting mental and behavioral health among vulnerable youth populations through technology-driven prevention programs. This morning, you're going to learn more about one of her projects related to increasing vaccination rates for the potentially cancer-causing HPV virus. Her research also includes work conducted in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, where she assessed the mental health needs of Black and Vietnamese refugee populations in New Orleans. Additionally, her studies on discrimination in health among minority nurses and Asian Americans during COVID-19 pandemic have received wide recognition. And she has a leadership role in a multinational working group assessing ethical and methodological challenges. So Dr. Chen has led 22 grants, mentored 130 students, postdoctoral fellows, and junior faculty, and has shared her research findings at over 150 conferences. alongside her colleagues, students, and community partners. And she's received numerous national awards for her contributions to science, clinical practice, and mentoring. And she, as President Guskowitz mentioned, she did participate in the Spartan bus tour, and I'm sure she'll have a few comments about that as well. We're very proud to have her at MSU. Please welcome Dr. Angela Chen.
Thank you. With a great honor, I'm excited to share some of my work here today. And I really want to thank you, Dr. Gage, you know, for your kind introduction and spell my name so beautifully. So I share the story that as a first-generation immigrant myself, I know it's a little bit difficult to have everybody spell my name correctly. And it happens that my middle name, Cha Chen, that's how my family call me, the pronunciation and spelling are very similar to my last name. And so over years, people, I share that with my fellow colleagues on the bus, and people have been calling me in a very creative ways. Some people would just call me Angela Cha-Cha-Cha, and some people call me Angela Chen-Chen-Chen, you know, all different variations. And I love it. I think that's the beauty of the language, the beauty of the culture. So today, all right. So Dr. Gage already introduced some work I do. So as a faculty who have been here for only 15 months, I came in, I was so amazed for all those incredible friendship and support from inside and outside of MSU and local communities. And I will show you why. And my work primarily using different technologies to develop those user-friendly, developmentally, linguistically, and culturally congruent interventions to encourage behavior, to promote behavior and mental health well-being. And today, I'm going to show two different examples, how we leverage those technology to work with different populations to promote HPV vaccination among youth. By the way, HPV stands for human papillomavirus, just in case if you are curious. And it gets really easy to mix, you know, confused with HIV. So I got those questions all the time, including my own boys. And okay, there we go. All right. And so usually when I do some prevention or have some talk, you know, try to engage community or clinical partners or parents, and they always ask, the question I got asked all the time is, do they work? All right. Well, luckily, so we have doing whole over years, we have done a lot of pilots, and including one of the ongoing studies that we're working with MSU pediatric clinics, four different sites in the Great Rensing areas. The study is funded by National Institute of Health. And those pilot study findings indicate some those low cost and scalable interventions have shown effects in increasing the knowledge and awareness of the disease and the vaccine. It also promotes positive attitudes by addressing the vaccine hesitancy. And most importantly, those interventions have boosted the vaccine intention and uptake. That's the desired behavior we would like, you know, use or everybody to get to protect their own health. So just give you some example. We just published an article from the study we work with the Vietnamese immigrant mothers. So in this pilot study, actually two pilot studies, one of the very first studies, 100% of those Vietnamese mothers who watch the stories that you will get a slim of that later said that, yes, they are going to vaccinate their kids against the cancer. And the two main reasons is it because it protects my kids. And the other thing is because I want them to be healthy. So those are two main reasons. And in the second pilot, we also measure the vaccination intake. So for those kids, you know, before they reach, if they get the first shot before they turn 15, they only need two shots. And if they get the first one after they turn 15, unfortunately, they will need to get three. So we really try to push them to get those prevention measures as early as possible. So in the second pilot, 56% of those moms said their kids got the first shot of HPV vaccine, you know, at 2 months follow-up. So we are very pleased for that, and we're still doing the follow-up work. Okay. So why HPV vaccine? There's so many different vaccines out there. Why do we, you know, focus on this one? Mainly because it's not mandatory vaccine. Kids do not to have this vaccine for the school requirement. And also HPV infection is really the most common sexually transmitted infection in the U.S. and globally. And also is related to 6 types of cancers and affects everybody, males and females. So over 42 million of Americans are infected with certain types of, you know, HPV, and that can cause different diseases, including cancers. 30 million people, including youth, are infected every year. And those data are from, you know, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The annual deaths attributed to HPV-related cancer is over 7,000. And stunningly, you know, it also costs substantial economic burden equal to $3.8 billion annually in the United States. We could have saved all those money and use it in other meaningful ways if we do our prevention work well. While HPV vaccine is widely available and effective, the completion rate is definitely beyond, you know, really low, really significant below what's the national goal is 80%. And I want to show you an example. So our one of the reasons we choose to work with the Vietnamese immigrant family because Vietnamese females have the highest rate of HPV-related cervical cancer mortality. And their vaccination completion rate, we don't have a national statistics because all those national statistics do not break out, you know, by specific racial ethnic groups. And so we got those data from descriptive study from local people, maybe in Texas or California, from the population design. It's 9%, and the national goal is 80%. So you definitely see the big health disparities in this area, and that also means that it's a huge room for improvement. So we work with youth, which hopefully, you know, they get their first vaccine to protect themselves at age 11 or 12. And CDC also recommends that they can actually start the vaccine at age 9. But, you know, reality, when I talk to the parents about, you know, the, you know, parent with 9-year-olds, it's really challenging for them to see the connection between HPV and the need of the vaccination, you know, because they are not, kids are not in puberty yet. And we also definitely include their caregivers and parents because the important role in health decision making. We also specifically working with immigrant and refugee population because the limited English proficiency, the lack of knowledge and wellness, and believe that vaccination can probably encourage children's premarital sex. But I can tell you with the evidence that we have tested that hypothesis, none of the evidence indicate that there's any relationship between kids who get vaccine or they would do their premarital sex earlier than parents want to see. And this is the first thing I want to show you. So this is the fun part. I wish I could show you the game, and so you can actually play that. So the game is called HPV Detective Game, and we co-developed this game with our youth and their caregivers and healthcare providers and community advocate groups all together, and we have done a series of pilot testing. And so in this detective game, we put it in the waiting room at a clinical setting. May I ask, what's the average time that you wait to be seen before you see your provider? I'm sorry, I have to turn the mic off.
I'm sorry, 3 months.
That's definitely insane, 3 months.
Anybody else?
30 minutes is probably the average time. Anybody have a very positive experience that you get there, you got the scene in 1 second? Okay. So we heard from my personal experiences as well, that we heard that it's about, in the average, 15 to 30 minutes before you see your provider. And what do you do when you are waiting? What do people do?
Go on Instagram.
On the phone. Right. Or on some devices, doing something fun. Right. Update your social media, the pictures. Share how fun the tour is, right? All those things. Okay. So just one day, I was waiting. I was with my younger boy. You know, it was like 90 minutes wait. And then I was thinking that everybody is so busy with their phone and devices to entertain themselves, right? And then why don't we create something fun and engaging for our patient population to really turn that moment to be a teachable moment. And so they get those knowledge, they get the tools, they get motivation to communicate with their providers so in the waiting room. So that's how we get started with this series of intervention. So fortunately, we have the funding, we have the right people, including the youth and parents. I can tell you how excited when they were involved in this intervention development, because usually they will tell you nobody bother care about what they think, right? And I think I don't really feel like I think even for 9 years old they have the right to be engaged in a meaningful discussion for their health care, because they are the recipients of the vaccines and nobody tell them what it's for, and the only thing they feel is, ouch, oh, so painful. I don't need another one of that. So that's how we get started. And the second one I want to share with you is the digital storytelling. So storytelling has been a traditional cultural practice for many minority and marginalized communities. It's a way to communicate and pass the cultural elements and the tradition to the next generation. We choose stories telling specifically is because it's a community-based participatory method to communicate culturally relevant health messages. The participants who went through that workshop to create the stories, and also the people who watch the stories tell us it promotes the feelings of empowerment, sense of self-efficacy, and have really strengthened their perception of social support to promote positive behaviors. So I'm going to give you a brief snapshot of how the story looks like.
When I was 11 years old in Vietnam, the only thing that I was worried about is how to survive during the Vietnam War. Even during the war, my mom still brought me to a local health clinic to get vaccinated so I can be protected. My family came to America as refugees in 1991. I was so surprised that everyone has the family doctor and prevention care in this country. I have learned about HPV vaccines during Asian Pacific Community in Action's health fair, but I did not pay attention to it. My youngest daughter's doctor made me aware about the HPV vaccines for girls. My oldest daughter, who is now a nurse.
Okay, so we have to stop here, but more than welcome to reach me. I'm happy to show more. All right. So far we have co-developed 4 different stories with our Vietnamese immigrant mom with vaccinated kids, because we want to learn what really motivates you. What's your perception of HPV and the vaccine and the healthcare system here overall, what the challenges you encounter, how do you overcome those challenges, and most importantly, why do you decide to vaccinate your child? Okay, I know this is a very busy slide. I try to put all related projects that are ongoing with my MSU colleagues and local communities, including schools, right on one slide. So I have been here for 15 months, and I can tell you how much I appreciate all those supports that I get from MSU Inside Out and local communities to make this happen. So I want to highlight two of the projects, actually three maybe, on the slide. So for the HPV Innovative Videos College Students project, we work with undergraduate Spartans from five different disciplines, including nursing, biochem, and acting, engineering, what's the other one? Neuroscience. So it has been very exciting. We meet every month, and for them, so they group together, they create the scripts, and we are also working with the faculty and students in College of Communication of Arts and Sciences to put everything together. So very soon, I hope that some of our students will be able to see those videos very quickly. So those videos are designed by our students and for our students. And the other exciting projects that work together, you already see some of those collaborators in the video. They are also on the tour to work with school nurses and Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, Michigan Association of School Nurses, just to name a few, and to address children's chronic pain, mental health issues, and substance misuse issues. All right, so there's no way I do it together. We do everything, I do it myself. We do everything together. We always work with our key stakeholders. So you see some of the photos on the top. Those are people who really help us, getting those products happen and be able to use in the real world. And the bottom photos are some of my research team members. Okay, so I want to thank you all for your time and attention today. You know how much I appreciate the opportunity to share the work, and I look forward to continue collaborating and have the conversation with people as we work together to really promote public health and well-being in our communities. The other thing I want to share, I hope everybody can see that as a buzz. And I would like to extend, I'm still, I haven't really completely recovered from this tour, as you can tell. I kind of lose my voice because, I over-talked and too excited. And I definitely think that, the people or the support, the spirit on the bus, is just remarkable, shared among us is remarkable. And I want to extend my heartfelt thanks to our president and all our colleagues who made the Spartan Bus Tour possible. They take extremely good care of us physically, mentally, and perhaps spiritually as well. And I haven't had the courage to stand on the scale to see how much pounds I gain, over the 3 days. Okay. And I feel like I'm, the first question when I got that notice, I feel like, why me? What did I do to deserve to be on the bus? If somebody can share that story with me. And I'm deeply honored and grateful that to have the opportunity to join the bus. Relatively new faculty here, this tour really provides me an invaluable opportunity to see, to talk, to engage with communities and really witness the incredible impact that MSU people have made across the state. It highlights MSU wide-reaching influence in areas such as healthcare and agriculture, education, economical development, and of course, environmental sustainability. So if you have any question, one of the really touching story on the bus is that we have a community member, her family have been deeply impacted by the chemical toxic PFAS. And if you have any question about PFAS, I will refer you to Dr. Angela Wilson sitting here. She can tell you how the story and how terrible, how severely that impact our environment and human health. So I want to thank you again. Thank you for bringing me here. Thank you for helping me and supporting me to do it in the community engaged research and innovation. Thank you.
Any questions?
Can I make just a
comment?
I
was told that I should be here for questions.
I thought I'd say, you're not quite done. No, my comment is truly a comment and not a question for you, but I just want to really say how impressed I am by the work that you are doing in teaching young women to be educated advocates for their reproductive health. As a mother of a teenager, I insisted that she get her HPV vaccine. I probably didn't explain it as well as I should have, and I wish we had your game to play. But as I was listening to your presentation, it struck me that you're not only teaching in that moment about the vaccine that's about to happen, but you're preparing these women to be lifelong learners about their reproductive health and advocates for it. It is an area that I don't have to tell you has been underfunded, understudied, underappreciated, and we are really grateful that you are here at Michigan State to elevate and amplify this work. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm proud to be a Spartan. Any other question?
I'm just curious, Vietnamese American women are most vulnerable to this HPV related cancer. Do we have an understanding of why?
Yeah, I think it mostly is that when we start working with them, language is definitely a big issue, and culturally values, because this, you know, HPV has been a touch, you know, it's very uncomfortable for people in certain cultures or maybe across culture to talk about reproductive health. So I remember in the early days when HPV vaccine just, you know, get approved by FDA and be available on the market in 2006, it has been marketed as a female disease, you know. They probably still have to remember. And it definitely brings a lot of stigma attached to it, and people don't want to talk about it. So when we say about sexual, it's the most common sexual transmitted infections. If I say that to the parents, I scare them away. Nobody wants to talk to me anymore. So, but really, we have to use the right language and communication to talk to people who might try to disseminate public health issues. So it really, vaccine is a cancer prevention strategy. And as soon as we say that, parents get it. They say, yeah, I want to protect my kids from cancers. And the other reason is, I am a healthcare provider myself. I can tell you how difficult to navigate healthcare system here with so many different insurance coverage. You know, sometimes the pharmacy will call me, hey, can you use a different medication? Your patient's insurance doesn't cover that, and which is really sad because we already know that medication works for that patient. So why do we want to switch to a different medication for the money issue? So this is just an example. And they also feel being legal, like neglected, like people are less likely to provide those education to them. So when we start working with them, really the first thing is they never heard of it, and they don't know that exists, and they don't know a vaccine can protect their kids. So I think to get the message out to the public, working with those key stakeholders, using the language they can understand and accept it, those are the keys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Any other questions?
Thank you so much, and we're grateful that you were on the bus tour, and appreciate all you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll now turn to personnel actions, and I'm going to turn to Interim Provost Thomas Yaitko.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the October 2024 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Kimberly J. Arcaleo, PhD, Professor, College of Nursing, with tenure, effective October 25th, 2024. Carolyn Mansfield, DVM, Professor, Department of Small Animal and Clinical Sciences, with tenure, effective January 13, 2025. Daniela Renee Filipiak, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of English, with tenure, effective January 1, 2025. I present for approval the following personnel actions. I'm pleased to recommend Richard Zernecki, BS, Associate Vice President, MSU IT Office of the ACIO, and Interim Information Officer, Department of IT Services CIO, for a change in title to Chief Information Officer, Department of IT Services CIO, effective October 1st, 2024. I'm pleased to recommend Michael Senambrogio, JD, Professor, College of Law, and Interim Dean, College of Law, for a change in title to Dean, effective October 25th, 2024. I'm pleased to recommend Vinny Gore, MSED, Senior Vice President for Student Life and Engagement, for a change in position and title to Executive Vice President for Administration, effective March 3, 2025. It is recommended that the title of Vice President and University Spokesperson be changed to Vice President and Chief Communications Officer, effective October 25, 2024, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect this change. The custodians of board and university level policy documents are authorized to update position titles referenced in those policies in alignment with this action and in consultation with the Office of the President. Therefore, I am pleased to recommend Emily Durand, MA, Vice President and University Spokesperson, for a title change to Vice President and Chief Communications Officer, effective October 25, 2024. It is recommended that the title of Vice President for Marketing, Public Relations, and Digital Strategy be changed to Vice President and Chief Marketing Officer, effective October 25, 2024, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect this change. The custodians of board and university-level policy documents are authorized to update position titles referenced in those policies in alignment with this action and in consultation with the Office of the President. Therefore, I am pleased to recommend Heather Swain, BA, Vice President for Marketing, Public Relations, and Digital Strategy, for a title change and Chief Marketing Officer, effective October 5, 2024. That the title of Vice President Chief Safety Officer be added, effective November 2024, and that all applicable policy documents be to reflect the change. The custodians of board and university level policy documents are authorized to update position titles referenced in those policies in alignment with this action and in consultation with the Office of the President. You should note that this title is changing to Chief of Police and Executive Director of Public Policy. It is also recommended that the title Senior President be eliminated effective January 1, 2025, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect this change. The custodians of board and university-level policy documents are authorized to update position titles referenced in those policies in alignment with this action and in consultation with the Office of the President. Note also, please, that this title is changing to Associate Vice President for Residential Housing and Auxiliary Enterprises. It is recommended that the title of Vice President for Student Affairs be created effective January 1, 2025. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
All those in any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Personnel actions are approved.
Thank you, President. Thank you, trustees.
Thank you. So we'll move to committee reports, and so we'll turn to Trustee Sandy Pierce for the committee report on budget and finance. Trustee Pierce.
Thank you. As chair of the trustee committee on budget and finance, I move that the board of trustees hereby adopts the 2026 capital outlay project request and five-year capital outlay plan included as attachment A.
Call for support. Okay. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
If I might, I've asked Barb Kranz to just give us a few comments. This is a very large investment.
Good morning. Thank you. So State of Michigan requires each public higher education institution to submit annually their five-year capital plan. The plan must be adopted by the Board of Trustees prior to our submission to the state. The state also allows or provides an opportunity for institutions to submit their top priority one project for capital outlay cost participation support. The administration recommends to the Board of Trustees that we submit the Engineering and Digital Innovation Center project to the state for consideration for cost sharing. Just briefly on the Engineering and Digital Innovation Center, it will support the emergence of a strong and transformative ecosystem focused on the convergence of digital and physical technologies. It will also support partnerships across at least six colleges at Michigan State. The center will be a strategic resource necessary to support interdisciplinary teaching, learning, and research in areas ranging from AI, materials and semiconductors, to game design and quantum computing. It will lead to new discoveries, talent development, and economic development. With support from the Board of Trustees, the administration will submit the plan and the capital outlay request on October 31st.
Thank you, Barb. Okay, going on to our second action item, as chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to enter into a long-term ground lease, easements, and related documents with Consumers Energy for property located in the South Campus area with proximity of the dairy anaerobic, hope I said that right, digester facility upon such terms as may be acceptable to the president or his designee.
Support?
Support.
Okay.
And actually, George Smith is available online for discussion if anyone has a question. If not, we can call for the vote.
Any questions? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Anthony Hall Building Envelope Renewal.
Support.
Okay. If anyone has any questions, Dan Bowman is available for discussion. If not, we can call for a vote.
Questions? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to the Board of Trustees 614 real estate policy as indicated in Attachment A.
Your second.
Support.
Support.
If anyone has any questions, Stephen Fletcher is available for discussion. If no questions, we can call for a vote.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes.
The committee also received updates on various capital projects. Phil Zecker, our chief investment executive, facilitated a discussion regarding investments in coordination with the Association, a governing board of universities and colleges. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. We'll turn to the Committee on Academic Affairs and turn to Trustee Renee Kanacki-Jefferson.
Thank you. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I have two motions that I'll be bringing forward. The first, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to BOT 303, Standards for Research Policy, as indicated in Attachment A.
Second. Support.
And I would note that Doug Gage is here for questions, if there are any.
Any questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
And then the second motion, on behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University, as the sole corporate member of MSU Healthcare, Inc., hereby adopts the attached amended and restate bylaws of MSU Healthcare, Inc., and be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University delegates the activities of the corporate member, with the exception of sections 302 A, D, and E, to the president of the university, as allowed in sections 3.01 and 410 of the amended and restated bylaws.
Any discussion?
And I would note that Norm Hubbard is available here if there are any questions.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Abstentions? Or opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
The committee also met and received the final fall enrollment report and updates on unionization and the Henry Ford Health Partnership. Interim Provost Yitzko is now going to provide just a few remarks on the university's final fall enrollment numbers, and so I will turn things over to him.
Thank you, Trustee Kanekadefasin. I'm proud to announce that MSU is the number one choice for in-state students looking to attain higher education. Indeed, this has led to steady growth in enrollment, with the largest number of students ever attending Michigan State University today. This year, the total university enrollment is over 52,000 students, with 52,000 students and 89. This fall, we welcomed roughly 11,000 new undergraduates, 9,652 first-year students, and 1,326 transfer students. When added to our returning students, this yields a total of over 41,000, with exactly 41,234 students being the largest undergraduate enrollment to date. This includes 10,723 students of color. At 27.5% of the domestic class, it is also the most diverse undergraduate student body to date. Total enrollment includes international students from 138 countries, all 50 states, and all 83 of Michigan's counties, with Oakland, Wayne, and Macomb counties being the three top counties in terms of student enrollment. Students of color make up a total of 27.8% of the domestic class, making it MSU's most diverse student body as well. Our 2024 entering class GPA remains strong, with an average high school GPA for the 2024 entering class of 3.74. Entering GPAs have remained consistent over the time, even throughout our increases in enrollment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And President, that concludes my report.
Great. Thank you. We'll turn to the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance. Trustee Brianna Scott.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby accepts the audited financial statements for the year ending June 30, 2024.
Support.
Is there any discussion? Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approves revisions to Board of Trustees 103, Board of Trustees Conflict of Interest Policy, as indicated in Attachment A.
Your second. All those in, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approves the following: a sponsored research agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, Inc., and an option and research use license agreement with IORA Nature Tech, Inc. Sorry.
Second.
Support.
Any discussion?
Doug Gage is available if there are any questions or discussion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Additionally, further discuss fiscal year 2024 audited financial performance. This concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. We'll turn to the Committee on Support Life and Culture with Trustee Kelly Tebe.
Thank you. The Student Life and Culture Committee met with the leaders of Recreation, Sports, and Fitness Services. We learned about the usage of intramural facilities, having returned to pre-COVID numbers with 2,000 participants and 94 fitness classes and 5,895 participants in IM Sports. The new Student Recreation and Wellness Center is currently on budget and scheduled, with the opening scheduled to be spring 2026. We also met with Dr. Alexis Travis, Assistant Vice Provost and Executive Director for University Health and Wellbeing, and Dr. Swapna Hingwi, Director of Counseling and Psychiatric Services. And I also want to note that it was the first committee meeting that our student liaisons joined us, which was really exciting to have them be part of that. And Dr. Travis and Dr. Hingwi are here to provide mental health services update.
Good morning, and thank you, Committee Chair Tebe, and good morning, Board. I'm Alexis Travis. I'm the Assistant Provost and Executive Director for University Health and Wellbeing, and I'm joined by my colleagues.
Good morning. My name is Swapna Hingwi. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the Director of CAPS.
And I believe we were supposed to have some slides this morning. I don't know if they're available. Okay, no slides. Well, I'll just talk a little bit about our data. So MSU has been participating in the National College Health Assessment for over 20 years. So what that means is we have over 20 years worth of data that highlights the things impacting our students in terms of their health behaviors and other stressors. In that data, we have now gone to a new survey, the ACHA, the American Health College Survey, and that's more inclusive, so we can see more of the demographic data related to mental health and what students are experiencing. So what we've seen this year is amongst the top 10 issues concerning students are stress, anxiety, depression, as well as ADHD and sleep difficulties. And sleep difficulties are often related to anxiety and depression. So what we're looking at are what are the stresses facing our students? It could be financial, it could be academic stress, it could also be related to some of the global conflicts that we're experiencing at the moment, as well as the lingering effects of COVID and other things that are in the environment. For example, we're currently in election season, and everybody knows being in a battleground state is particularly stressful. And so we're looking at where do we sit in comparison to I had this, but you would say MSU is close to national institutions. Data sets that show MSU fares compared to our counterparts in a sample data set. And you can see we're almost the same for most of those indicators. So we're looking at being creative, meeting our students where they're at, and continuing to listen and understand what the issues are. And I think Dr. Hingwi can speak a little bit more on some of the specifics.
And we are working on trying to get the slides up, correct? Great. There we go. There we go.
I'll show what I... Thank you. No problem. Okay. So this is the data set that I was talking about. And as you see, stress, anxiety, depression, sleep difficulties, and attention deficit disorder. I will say... Because we see a lot of students, we see a lot of students in CAPS. We also have several different areas across the university seeing students. And we know through our RCPD, our Resource Center for Persons with Disabilities, that ADHD and also other neurodivergence are increasing. And so we're looking at ways to be responsive and adaptive to that as well.
So just one other point that I wanted to add to that last slide, just to highlight, anxiety in college students has steadily increased over the last 14 to 15 years, and it's peaked in 2024. Again, I think we all understand the reasons why, but at MSU, 74% of the students surveyed in 2024 said that they had been diagnosed for severe or overwhelming anxiety. And then 29% of those said that that anxiety impacted their academic work and their academic performance. So I think that's really notable. And it's not just MSU, but really across the nation. So this slide is going to tell you a little bit more, show you a little bit more about what's happening at CAPS this fall versus last fall. So as student enrollment rises, so does the demand for mental health support. And so this trend is, again, evident across the nation, but also evident at MSU. So we have our largest enrollment number this year at more than 52,000 students, and our staffing levels at CAPS have remained unchanged for quite a few years. So if you look at the left side of the slide, this just kind of gives you a breakdown of what's happened last fall to this fall. And I'm looking at last August and September to this August and September only, which doesn't even include this month, which would change that bar graph significantly. So our CAPS Connect appointments, for those of you who aren't familiar, those are brief confidential consultation sessions. They're available at 21 different sites located around campus for students to utilize at any time. Those have increased by nearly 118%. Initial consultations have increased by nearly 42%. Drop-in visits have increased by 28%. And our crisis calls have increased by 28%. So the escalating demands are obviously, they're placing some significant pressure on our staff. However, the right side of the slide, I just want to highlight, we are very proud that the students who do use our services find them to be culturally sensitive and helpful. And there's a couple quotes up there. I'll read the shorter one. I felt very cared about and look forward to attending more CAPS counseling in the future. So I just want to highlight that the students who do use our services are really happy with our services. I won't go through all of these in detail. I just want to highlight a few of these enhancements to the mental health services we provide currently. What we try to do at CAPS is go out into the community and go out to where students are to improve access and to improve equity. So what I'll highlight are these embedded positions, our embedded CAPS counselors, and they're in three different locations on campus, and we're trying to figure out some ways to enhance that embedded program. And then TogetherAll is something new that we have that's an online peer-to-peer social media platform. It's peer support, it's anonymous, monitored by clinicians, and it's free for MSU students. Any MSU student can sign up with their email. So that's a very important resource that I think people need to be aware of. And then earlier this month, we had Fresh Check Day, a really uplifting mental health awareness and suicide prevention event. And I think there are probably people in the room who attended this event. It's through the Jordan Porco Foundation, and it's really about suicide prevention and mental health awareness. And we had about 600 to 700 students come through, and we're still getting all the feedback from those surveys. But what was beautiful about this event was that it was raising awareness, normalizing talking about mental health, reducing stigma, building community, and all here on our campus. So I think the last thing I want to say, I just want to acknowledge the CAPS staff, my CAPS staff. We care about student health, we care about student development, and we care about student success, and we deeply care about this community.
Thank you, Dr. Hingway. So as Dr. Hingway mentioned, we're both really honored to be here representing the CAPS team and representing the staff in mental health and trauma support services pillar, of which there are many. And I also want to say that although we do have staff, the demand that we're seeing is increasing, as you've heard, and so we do need an increase in staffing. And when we look at who we're inviting in into our MSU team, we want to make sure that our CAP staff is representative of the population that we serve. So we're looking in to bring counselors in and psychiatrists in from different demographic backgrounds. And it's not just about how they appear, but it's the lived experience that they bring into the role so that they're able to relate to the students that they see. We're also looking at, you heard about TogetherAll, which is a new program offering online for peer support. We want to have the physical component here on campus so we can have peer support available, because we know it takes different approaches to meet different needs of individuals, and so we want to be as flexible as possible and meet our Spartans where they're at. We also know that alcohol and other drugs remain a risk to our students, and so we want to have a clinical component, a stronger clinical component here, and have a few more counselors that are trained specifically in substance use to support our community members. We know we are a small department. We're about 300 people across health and well-being, serving a population of over 52,000 students and, in some cases, 15,000 employees. And so we know we don't do this work alone. I want to take a minute to acknowledge our partners, including the Department of Psychology, the Department of Psychiatry, Family and Couples Therapy. And we are looking at how do we map out the services and where they exist. I noticed earlier Dr. Chia Chen Chan mentioned that it can be difficult for people to navigate the healthcare system. That's equally so for the mental healthcare system, and we want to make sure that at MSU, people know where to go to get services at the right time in the way that meets their needs. We also want to acknowledge the ASMSU bill that was introduced, 6118. I know Christian Allman is here somewhere. Who introduced and sponsored the bill. We are working collaboratively to make sure that we do have appropriate training options. And I want to say in the last year, we introduced mental health first aid through a partnership with the HOPE Network. Now we want to introduce question, persuade, refer, QPR. I know Trustee Scott had mentioned that last year when we met, and we're working on how do we do this, whether it's right to highly recommend the training or whether the training should be mandated. And we know there's a lot of sensitivity around that. I don't know if you wanted to say something.
Sure. I wanted to thank them for really introducing this initiative to all of you. And I got to meet them for the first time at Fresh Check Day. So I wanted to also say that that's also something I really support as well. When we introduced this bill, 6118, to the General Assembly, this was a bill that was in months of preparation and one that we deeply considered before we introduced it. I've asked fellow students, fellow faculty on campus who have experienced the loss of a loved one to suicide and if they would be open to this kind of training, whether it be highly recommended or mandated or some sort of level of enforcement. And it was a resounding yes among the people because it seems like while we have a training right now, SARV training for people who experience sexual assault and relationship violence on our campus, there isn't something like this for the problem of suicide on our campus. And we have had a record high number of suicides last year. And I think that if we really want to be taking a stance and an initiative towards preventing suicide on campus, that we do something along the lines of what our CAPS, our University Health and Wellbeing Services, have provided, and along with this service proposed by Bill 6118. So, thank you.
Thank you, Christian. So I know we only had a few minutes to share our update on mental health services. I do just want to end by saying that we recently had a visit from the International Accreditation for Counseling Services. Gladly, we passed the accreditation visit. However, there was a recommendation that we increase our counseling staff to one per every 1,000 to 1,500 students. And so we'll be looking at that landscape of counseling and mental health services and making a recommendation to both Provost Jaisco and SVP Gar in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate all the work that you do and also all the work that your staff does. So please let them know that we very much appreciate them. And you have my full support and whatever resources that you need for our students. And thank you. Is it Christian? Sorry. Yeah. Thank you for introducing that bill. It's something that we've had a lot of conversations over the last years. We've recognized the trend, too. And thank you for bringing it up. Anyone else? Mm-hmm.
Thank you. This is amazing. I want to acknowledge and recognize and thank Trustee Tebay for her leadership in having this presentation this morning on a very important topic. As has been mentioned, we have had elevated numbers in suicides on this campus, which is very concerning to the trustees up here. We have talked about this in many of our work sessions and how to tackle this phenomenon, not just in the world, but specifically specifically here on this campus. And I want to thank you, Dr. Travis, you and your team, for all of the work that you have done. I appreciate everything that you're bringing to the table. I appreciate Vinny for making certain that we are providing what you all need. I know we're a long ways away from the ratio that you just indicated that is recommended for counseling. And so as Trustee Tebe has stated, you have my full support, I believe, that of the board. We want to make sure that we have the resources there for our students, as well as you've indicated, our faculty. And I also wanted to commend you all for really thinking seriously about QPR training. I've undergone it a few times. Unfortunately, I did lose a nephew to suicide in July. He was a college student in Texas. And so this is very personal to me. It is something that I think will save lives. And I appreciate that you're thinking about whether it should be mandatory. I personally think it should be, so that those of us that are around people know what to look for. So again, thank you for your work.
I just want to echo, I'm going to echo what's already been said, but also to thank you, Dr. Travis, Dr. Hingway. When I first visited back probably about 7 months ago on my listening and learning tour, we talked about mental health first aid, and I'm so happy to hear that you're introducing that now. We talked about diversifying our team of counselors and psychologists because the importance of those different lived experiences for our students, being able to relate better to a counselor with similar backgrounds, and you're working on that and making progress. The third thing that we talked about, I think, was about telehealth, and I'm just curious if how successful that's been and if there's anything we can do to help in that regard.
Within CAPS, we do offer virtual appointments and in-person appointments. It's really just based on what our clients and patients prefer. But then we also have a partnership with YouWill, and that's a telehealth therapy option, and that is free for students, and it's actually really well utilized by students who want to just do teletherapy, and then they will use that service for, you know, maybe not the entire time they're here in school, but for quite a while, for lengthy periods of time. So it's a really good resource, and we want to try to actually promote that a little bit more for our students.
Yes.
Is it Dr. Hingway?
Hingway.
Please forgive me. My apologies. I just had a question and another thought came to my mind about student athletes, the pressures that they face. Mental health is a real issue with that group. I'm wondering whether or not you all are in partnership with MSU Athletics and whether you provide services, where those services are provided, if you could talk about that a little bit. Thank you.
I can. Yes, we do have services available to all of our MSU students, including athletics. Athletics also has a separate behavioral health team. And actually, I was just speaking with AD Halla last week around the recommendations to increase and consulting with them as well. And so I think there is an intention there to increase their mental health staff as well. But all of the options today are also to our student athletes, and we do collaborate both at events and other opportunities to support our students. You have more to add on that?
The only thing I would add is that we make a point of having one of our CAPS Connect locations at athletics, and we have two staff who, Dr. Bruce and Dr. Scott, who typically do a lot of liaison with the athletics department from CAPS.
This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll now hear from the liaisons and with our Maddie.
Hi, everyone. Since our last meeting, I'm happy to say things around campus have been picking back up. We are currently into pretty much the middle of the semester and midterm season, which means students have a lot on their plate. As I mentioned before, through holding this position, I'm also the chair for UCSLE. We have had two meetings so far this year and have been able to welcome new representatives and members to the committee. We've had multiple different presentations at these meetings, for example, most recently, one from MSU Vote and one regarding updates and an overview on ADP. A big takeaway from these presentations was that in order for these resources to be as helpful as possible, students have to utilize them when needed. That can only happen if students know about them and know where to find them. Michigan State has countless resources available for students, but without proper communication or accessibility, they aren't being used to their full capacity. I feel like there could be room to look into incorporating different DEI, ADP, and SRR training into freshman orientation curriculums to help acclimate new students to the school and set them up for success as soon as possible. I think it would also be beneficial to highlight where different student resources are located on campus to help raise awareness and engagement. Going off of this, it is important to make sure that while there is information about different student resources online, they must be properly updated and actually available, as certain resources don't seem to have been updated since at least shortly after the pandemic. Although it seems small, something like just making sure that critical resources are updated and accessible can be incredibly beneficial to helping students succeed in the future. I'm looking forward to continuing to work together this year to help bridge the gaps between students and the university. Thank you.
Thank you, Maddie. Next, we'll hear from RHA Liaison Aaron Codwell.
Good morning, everyone. The Residence Halls Association has had a busy semester so far, placing focus on programming efforts, constituent finances, and constitutional edits. This fall, we have put a lot of time and energy into increasing the programming we provide and collaborate on around campus. I mentioned in the September meeting one of RHA's major goals for the 55th session being engagement. Getting on-campus students involved in their community is the end goal, and one of our approaches to achieving that is programming. This has looked like tie-dye and charm bracelet making events, hall governments or neighborhood caucuses planning their own fall-themed events, and collaboration with larger campus organizations to promote things like wellness events or the recent Fresh Check Day. Though engagement is one of RHA's main goals, it is important to clarify that we are not only looking to get people involved in their on-campus student government, we use our audience and presence on campus to promote a variety of events that may catch students' interest and help them get involved in the things they care about. Another way we are able to assist with this is through providing funding not only to our constituents but registered student organizations. Our Committee on Budget process has officially begun and meets biweekly to award different student groups with funds they have requested. Groups typically use this money to throw their own events, attend conferences or tournaments, and improve their reach to on-campus students. We have already been able to offer up around $4,000 through this process and $14,000 through direct sponsorships from members of our leadership team. We also recently hired our own full-time business office manager to help our funding process move more smoothly. They begin with us next week. And the last thing RHA has been placing its focus on the past couple months has been our constitution. Our governing documents are due for updates that ensure they align with both RHA and university practices. Some examples of this include rewriting hiring practices to align with updated MSU policies, clarifying the meaning of different types of RHA membership, and updating outdated language. This will be an ongoing process throughout the entire semester, starting with our constitution, and edits to bylaws will follow in a few months. Our team has been putting a lot of work into cleaning up the internal processes of the Residence Halls Association in order to ensure that our constituents are being best served both in practice and on paper. I look forward to seeing where the rest of the semester takes us. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Next, we have our ASMSU liaison, Connor Lay.
Good morning. Since we last met in September, ASMSU has been hard at work passing legislation to advocate for and better student lives. A few that I would like to highlight include Bill 6117, which reopened advocacy from the 57th session to advocate for the removal of Justin S. Morrill's name from Morrill Hall and Morrill Plaza. Bill 6118, which is to advocate for suicide prevention and rehabilitative training for all during the month of September, which is recognized as National Suicide Prevention Month. You all heard a wonderful presentation from Alexis Travis, Wapna Hingwe, and UHW about their efforts, including this advocacy point, and we have the privilege to be in the room with the introducer of the bill, Broad Business College Representative Christian Allman. So I implore you to all feel free to ask some questions about how we can better student mental health and well-being. Bill 6120, which advocates for the implementation of a combo exchange and a meal swipe donation program, which would go to the MSU Food Bank, is currently in the works. We hope we can have this advocacy achieved soon so we can fight against student hunger and food insecurity on campus. Bill 6123, which advocates for and supports the Stop Campus Hazing Act, which is a federal bipartisan piece of legislation that would amend the CLEARI Act to require institutions to report acts of hazing in their annual security report and would require institutions to provide programming and resources around hazing prevention. Lastly, Bill 6125 calls on MSU to release a statement affirming their support of survivors of sexual assault. This bill comes to fruition following the several state news articles about the contents of the Nassar documents. We hope that with this bill, MSU takes accountability for the harm that was caused to the hundreds of survivors that were impacted by Nassar. Last night, ASMSU General Assembly met and passed even more legislation, but there are two that I want to mainly highlight. Bill 6130 advocates for the passage of the Fair Chance Access to Housing Act. This act is a Michigan piece of legislation that would outlaw landlords from discriminating against potential tenants with criminal backgrounds. Bill 6133, which I want to note has several ASMSU representative, ASMSU staff, and RSO signatures on it, advocates for and urges for respective parties to vote no on proposals and plans to merge the Residential College of Arts and Humanities with the College of Arts and Letters. Residential College of Arts and Humanities representative Abigail Rodriguez, who is in the audience today and is our ARCA representative, passed this bill to ensure that students who call ARCA home get to in the future. ARCA was established with the mission to support students and faculty as they engage in work that challenges norms, addresses inequities, and mobilizes the arts and humanities as a force of good. This mission is very different from that of the College of Arts and Letters, and while both colleges have great curriculum, faculty, and programming, ARCA deserves to be its own college. ASMSU and Faculty Senate, special shout out to Justin St. Charles, had the opportunity to host a Board of Trustees candidate forum last week. The forum featured the four major party candidates who answered off the MSU 2030 strategic plan and audience questions. This forum acted as a way for the community to learn more about the candidates who are campaigning for the two open seats come November 5th. I want to thank the candidates who were able to make it to the forum for their time and willingness to meet with members of the MSU community. Thank you to Mike Bailo, who I'm sure is somewhere in the audience right now, Julie Madej, Rebecca Barhart-Cook, and Thomas Stallworth III. For those who would like to watch the forum, we have the recorded sessions in the bio of ASMSU's Instagram, or you can always come up to me and ask for them. Lastly, I want to recognize that there are several students, faculty, and staff and groups here that ASMSU supports and wants to highlight. Firstly, per Bill 6065, ASMSU supports and will continue to advocate for MSU to look into their investment policy and divest. ASMSU also recognizes and supports the Union of Tenure System Faculty and calls for MSU to end stalls and recognize their unionization per Bill 6071. Lastly, and newest to the list, ASMSU supports ARCA students, faculty, and staff as they call on MSU to halt plans on dissolving and merging their college with the College of Arts and Letters through Bill 6133. These students and groups are here behind us urging and fighting for their causes, and I ask that as the Board of Trustees who represent Michigan State University, that you take time to listen, meet with these groups, and work together to find a way to achieve a solution. As our governing board, you have a duty to represent and make better the lives of those who attend, work, and call Michigan State home, and the first step is by thoughtfully listening to them. This concludes my report. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope to see positive change for our students.
Thank you, Connor. And lastly, we have Miles Roberts. On behalf of COGS.
All right. Thank you, and thank you for your time. I have two updates to share about the Council of Graduate Students from our most recent membership meeting. First is that we passed a resolution to subsidize an asynchronous virtual workshop to teach graduate students receiving fellowships how to properly pay taxes. COGS typically has at least one tax-related initiative every year because understanding how to fill out taxes is a common source of confusion among graduate students, just like it is for people across the country. And one section of our graduate student population with a particularly unique tax situation is students receiving fellowships from the federal government, which includes branches like the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health. While graduate students working as teaching assistants or research assistants typically have taxes automatically deducted from their stipend, fellowship students instead must manually pay quarterly tax estimates with the IRS. COGS often hears from fellowship students that they are not very confident with how to properly pay these estimates and get mixed levels of help from the free resources already available to them. This was the motivation for Resolution 24-FS-11, which offers subsidies for up to 60 fellowship students to take this virtual asynchronous workshop on how to properly pay quarterly estimates, decreasing the cost of the workshop from $25 per student to $10 per student. We are starting with 60 students to see how popular the workshop is and whether fellowship students find it helpful. But we are open to trying more students if demand is higher. My second update is about a report on perceptions of laboratory safety among graduate students. Many of our graduate students work in laboratories, and laboratory safety has been a topic of considerable interest among graduate students recently.
During the 23-24 academic year, there was an ad hoc committee formed amongst graduate students, mainly in the colleges of engineering and chemistry. The COG's full council heard multiple updates from the committee throughout the 23-24 academic year, just as it does for other graduate student committees. And the efforts of this particular committee culminated in a survey of a few hundred graduate students, asking them about their perceptions of safety in campus laboratories. In September of this year, the full council heard a report on the committee's findings, and in October, this October, the full council passed a resolution endorsing the report. One of the main findings of the report is that a large majority of graduate students feel safe in MSU laboratories and feel that adequate safety measures are taken in their laboratories. I've also talked with the Office of Research and Innovation on this topic, and we of course know that MSU laboratories are regularly inspected as required by law. However, a big finding of the report is that graduate students often have little knowledge of when and how often these inspections happen, and this can lead to the perception among graduate students that the inspections are not happening, even though they actually are. It is important that graduate students, not just their supervisors, are kept informed of safety inspections and safety procedures so that they can feel safe in their work areas. In my talks with ORI and the original Grad Student Lab Safety Committee, some options for moving forward include creating a committee of grad student and postdoctoral scholars to help advise ORI on lab safety topics, or require laboratories to have a central posting of the dates and times where the laboratory last had inspections. I think either of these could go a long way toward helping graduate students be more aware of MSU safety procedures and feel safer in laboratories, which are the important prerequisites for them to continue doing their pioneering research. That concludes my report. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Miles. Next, we'll turn to the faculty liaison. I believe the only report is Angela Wilson. Thank goodness you made it back. Otherwise, I'd have to call on Mr. Lipton.
Thank you so much, Chairman Kelly. Appreciate it. So I will actually start talking about the bus tour. It's really been a terrific week, and I had the opportunity, obviously, to be on the Spartan bus tour. And the tour really visited a broad range, as the president already mentioned, of sites across Michigan. And I can't tell you how much it really instilled an incredible sense of community among those who were on the bus. We're so proud to be Michiganders and so proud to be Spartans as well. You know, we had a great deal of individuals and a great span from individuals who've been at MSU for months to those who've been at MSU for several decades. And so really spanning our colleges as well as administrative offices. The president's staff who organized the tour did an amazing job. It was the most well-organized travel experience that I think I've ever had in my many, many decades of career. And while I could touch on each of the stops, I just want to highlight several. As one of the founders of the MSU Center for PFAS Research, it was remarkable to really see the Wolverine factory and waste disposal sites. I have so much better perspective of the nearness of the homes and the water supplies to these locations. The Rockford community is indeed a community at risk, as are many in across our country. And I really come back, and I think many of our faculty come back with a much greater sense of urgency towards trying to address this really tremendous grand challenge. We visited Camp Grayling, and I was delighted about the selection of this site. It was a terrific acknowledgement of the importance of our veteran students, students in ROTC, the National Guard, and those planning military careers, as well as the many military dependents and families of these individuals who are Spartans or who have Spartan connections. I was so delighted that we selected that spot. Visiting many MSU spots, ag bio sites, of course, including our amazing Kellogg Biological Stations and our Grand Rapids campus, provided a terrific perspective about the vastness of the MSU footprint. The visit to Brianna Scott's hometown, Muskegon, highlighting the work being done at Muskegon High School to develop future teachers, particularly those among underrepresented communities, was so incredibly impactful, as was seeing the artwork of MSU Professor Teresa Dunn at the Muskegon Museum of Art, and she actually had a painting of one of our students was actually what she featured. Thank you to Trustee Scott for joining us at these sites. Truly, though, the Spartan bus tour was about community. The greater Michigan community, the broad Spartan community, and even the community and energy generated on the bus. Many thanks to President Guskowitz and his staff for bringing this program to MSU, and I encourage every faculty member and every administrative individual who may have interest to certainly go on many of the future buses. It really is an impactful time. Yesterday, the faculty representatives had a very productive discussion with the Board of Trustees where we touched on a number of topics. Among the topics, we discussed our plans to form a task force to consider available and needed opportunities to support the research and creative activities for faculty, particularly for those in areas for which large federal grants and other external supports are typically not available. Certainly, there are some mechanisms of support, but we recognize that there is a need for even more. We recognize the tremendous opportunities we have to grow our programs in stature and enable our terrific faculty to be even more competitive for national and international recognitions, which in turn bring greater recognition to our programs and enables an even greater valuation of our university and our university programs, impacting our students as well. We will continue to follow up on this topic. Faculty Senate, as Connor Lee already mentioned, we had a town hall candidate forum for Board of Trustees candidates in partnership with ASMSU. We thank MSU for their leadership in this, ASMSU and their leadership for this, and especially want to thank Faculty Senate at Large Member Justin St. Charles for partnering in this with Connor Lee, president of ASMSU, and his team. This forum is available, as Connor already mentioned, online, and all are encouraged to view this forum before casting your votes this fall. Indeed, it is a very incredibly informative video. We are furthering our work, considering the work that faculty do during non-pay periods. Of course, there's always some to be expected, but indeed, some faculty have a very large amount of work that is unpaid. This work is far-reaching, from supervisory roles during non-pay periods, service on search committees, for example, and leading often very large projects of passion, such as leading large high school research programs that have now become very important aspects of MSU outreach and engagement. We will be providing updates and at some point into the future recommendations in terms of some of these issues. Though somewhat preliminary, we are also considering routes to provide greater support to faculty when they undergo unanticipated situations, and I'll just leave it at that, and plan to form another task force to consider these issues broadly, comparing with resources available at other institutions as well. In conclusion, we thank the Board of Trustees for the opportunity for discussion, and again, thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the liaison reports.
And if I might, I just want to say thank you. The input that we received yesterday was really important, and we've already begun working on some of the initiatives we've talked about. But I really value this partnership with the liaisons. I know I speak for the board as well, that we are, you know, this partnership's about one team working together. So you know how to reach me, and I really value the input. So with that, we'll turn to Chair Kelly for the chair's report.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick things. We last met, the board had the opportunity to participate in the investiture ceremony of our new president. I think it goes without saying that the entire board is thrilled to continue to work with Kevin and his leadership team to further MSU's mission. Congratulations on that. It was a very nice ceremony. As the president previously mentioned, Tom Izzo had his number 10 Wildcats jersey officially retired by Northern Michigan. Tom was a starter there in 1974 to 1976, and he was the team captain in 1976-1977, which we learned today was 10 years before Trustee T-Bay was born. He was also inducted into the Northern Michigan Hall of Fame in 1990. Finally, I want to congratulate the 18 MSU graduates who received the Board of Trustees Award for Academic Excellence for having received a 4.0 grade point average this past summer. These students are amongst the best and brightest at MSU, and on behalf of the board, we want to wish them their continued success. Thank you. Finally, I want to thank everybody involved in the new boardroom. I think it works a lot better in the improved technology as well. So thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Chair Kelly. We'll next move through the remainder of trustee comments, starting with Vice Chair T-Bay.
Thank you, Stefan. I just first want to acknowledge that for those that didn't see the U.S. News and World Report 2025 Best College Rankings, Four of our programs are ranked in the top 25 nationwide. This includes the number one spot for supply chain management, number three for production operations, number 15 for management, and number 25 for accounting. So congratulations to those programs. Also want to acknowledge our commitment to excellence and student success is exemplified by five undergraduate students and alumna who have been nominated for the prestigious Rhodes Scholarship for the United States. They are Carolyn Downs, Belma Hadzig, Colby Orkut, Abigail Rodriguez, and Rachel Schneck. And I believe Abigail is actually here today. Abigail, can you just stand so we can give you a round of applause? Thank you, Abigail. We're also proud to recognize one as a semifinalist for the Rhodes Scholarship for India, that is Viona Catino, and another who has reached the finalist stage for Malaysia, that's Nur Amin Benti Halim. Their accomplishments are a testament to the extraordinary talent and ambition that flourished at MSU. I strongly encourage all students, faculty, and staff to take advantage of the opportunity to vote early. The Early Voting Center at WKAR is open on campus, making it convenient for our community to participate in the democratic process. Early voting ends November 3rd, and after the Early Voting Center closes, it will become an Election Day voting center for those who did not register yet. It is crucial for everyone to plan ahead and decide when and where they will cast their votes, which will help avoid any last-minute challenges on Election Day. I know Trustee Byron will share more about how MSU Votes has supported our campus's community engagement. And lastly, I'm excited to speak at this afternoon's groundbreaking of the new Plant Environmental Sciences building. Our university is doing so much good work to build spaces that will catalyze innovation, and I look forward to seeing how this new building will bolster our legacy as a global leader in plant environmental sciences. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tebay. Trustee Byron.
Thank you. For faculty honorifics, I'd like to acknowledge the outstanding achievements of our faculty. Congratulations to Dr. Vachi Swatel, who has been named as a fellow to the American Physical Society, a prestigious honor in the field. Also, a special mention to Dr. Leps Malehi, elected as president-elect of the North American Society for Psychology of Sport and Physical Activity. The FRIB was also recently honored by the United States Department of Energy Secretary of Energy Achievement Award, an honor that represents the highest recognition for team achievements. And finally, on Get Out the Vote, last month we had a presentation on MSU Votes, and I want to encourage everyone to get out and vote, vote early, or make a plan on how you're going to vote so that Michigan State can continue that trajectory of having student engagement in the fundamental right of being a citizen of the United States, and that is to vote. That concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Byram. Trustee Deno.
Thank you. So I normally try not to do personal comments, but I apologize if I've appeared distracted. I just found out that a relative of mine passed away. No, it's okay. Yervant Badikian, he's really good guy. He's been in and out of the hospital, so he's not suffering. He's definitely in a better place. I love you and miss you, and no one could have been more wrong on politics than you, Yervant. I'm sorry. For my trustee comments, I would just like to thank President Guskowitz for his leadership. It's really been a breath of fresh air. I'd like to thank everyone who worked on making this room beautiful, our unionized building trades, the people who swept up, took out the trash, just as important, all of you make this a great university. And finally, I'd like to thank everyone in law enforcement, our first responders, for making our community safer and better. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Dano. Trustee Pierce.
Okay, I don't have prepared comments, but I do want to mention a few things. Obviously, this boardroom is amazing, as Trustee Deno said. Thank you to everyone that worked on it. We had the opportunity yesterday as a board to go and tour the Multicultural Center, which is nearly complete, and I'm very excited for all of you that are going to have the opportunity to use it at your leisure. Also, I really want to thank the faculty and the student liaisons because they do come to our work session. We really hear you, and we listen to what your needs are, and we want to be partners with you in what your needs are. So thank you for really giving us the time and giving us the feedback in a constructive way. Really appreciate that. And the presentations today on HPV and on the state of the Spartan health, incredible information that I think all of us learn from. And so those are really important. And the last presentation on the state of mental health and Trustee Scott's personal story about her nephew is meaningful to all of us. So thank you for sharing that. And finally, I hope all of you can join us at the game tomorrow when we kick U of M's butt. Go green!
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. So they sat me next to Dan Kelly, and Dan Kelly thinks I talk too much, and he did threaten that he's going to kick me underneath this table if I go too long, so I'm going to try to be short today, Dan, and follow your guide. So I would like to first acknowledge all of those that attended the Spartan bus tour. If you all, those of you that are here, could please stand just to be acknowledged. You sacrificed your time for 2 days to cross the West Michigan area. Don't be shy if you're here. Just want to acknowledge all of you and thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank President Guskowitz for bringing this idea. I know it was one of those that we as trustees really thought was an exciting venture. And I am so elated that on the first tour, we got to come to my hometown. I had the opportunity to meet some amazing faculty and administrative staff. You all make me proud. I thank you for the great ambassadors that you are for this wonderful university. I especially was thrilled when our tour came to Muskegon, and I actually got to host a reception in a jewel in Muskegon, which is the Museum of Art. It was wonderful. We got to see some artwork by one of our I don't even think Ebony is here, but one of our staff here at the university, her father, was also featured in the museum. It was really awesome to see his work. I couldn't afford it, but it was great to look at. And it was inspiring to hear about the great partnerships that MSU has with Muskegon High School. We saw educators from MSU's long-running number one ranked elementary and secondary education programs in action, and that was quite amazing. These dedicated individuals and professionals are applying their training to support the next generation of Michigan students, demonstrating the profound connection between our university and our local schools. I'd also like to extend my congratulations to Michael St. Ambrogio, who recently was appointed as the Dean of the College of Law. Under his leadership, the college has made considerable progress in advancing student success and academic excellence, and I look forward to seeing its continued achievements under his guidance. Unfortunately, I don't think he was there last night, was he? So I did not get the opportunity to shake his hand and meet him personally, but I did want to acknowledge that we had, for the first time at least since I've been a trustee, a remarkable reception of all of our new deans here at the university and our deans that are more seasoned, we would call them, in addition to new faculty. I believe that we are in wonderful hands, and I appreciate the leadership of Thomas Yitzko and the appointments and President Guskowitz. I am super excited to do some upcoming tours with some of the colleges I have yet to tour. So I wanted to thank each of the deans that participated in that last night. It was awesome. I also wanted to acknowledge all of those that took part in making the investiture for our president a beautiful, remarkable occasion. It was to me, just a wonderful celebration of what I know is the future for this university and hearing the great plans that you have for us. I know that we are in great hands with your leadership, and I just thank you so much for sharing your family with us, getting to know them. We are just delighted to welcome them all to MSU. I also wanted to talk about the tour that we did yesterday in acknowledging Brian, whose last name escapes me right now, who was our amazing tour guide of the Multicultural Center. Yesterday, it was, to me, just a very emotional time. I know at one point I grabbed Trustee T-Bay and gave her this long hug that might have been too long. Because when we ran on two things. One was we wanted to bring to fruition the Multicultural Center, which was something that many minority students had really petitioned for before I was even a student here at Michigan State University. And so it was something very important to me as a trustee to make this a reality during my term. And I just appreciate Trustee T-Bay and also Trustee Joel Ferguson, who also were really big proponents of this. We went to the University of Michigan, took a tour of that Multicultural Center in amazement at what they had done. But I got to tell you, what we have done makes them look a little shabby. We got bragging rights on a Multicultural Center. That's all I can say. I thank Vinnie Gore, Dan Bowman, and all of those that were engaged, even past President Sam Stanley, for the vision that they brought, and all of those that took part in making certain that we listened to what our students said that they needed in this center. It really does celebrate diversity and inclusion. It is going to be a safe space, and I can only, you know, envision what we're going to see once it's opened in December. I did give a hint to the president that maybe we could have some kind of December celebration there to for the grand opening, to just acknowledge it and celebrate it as we go into the new year. So thank you to everyone involved in that. Wanted to just give a shout out to Mark D'Antonio, who was, what do you call it? He was inducted, thank you, into the Hall of Fame. And then a congratulations to Tom Izzo for having his jersey retired at Northern Michigan. And lastly, I just wanted to ask all of us to really think hard and long about those that are going to fill positions that we are going to be losing with Dan Kelly and Diane Byram, who are two amazing trustees that I feel blessed to have served with. Elections have consequences. That's all I can say. So let's be smart about who we elect into these positions. Get out and vote. It is so very important. And I'm going to end in the words of Joel Ferguson, that our better days remain ahead of us. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Trustee Vassar.
Good afternoon. Is it noon? No, we're still in the morning. Okay, good. First, Trustees Scott and Deno, Trustee Deno, I'm sorry about your loss. And I extend my condolences to Anna. I'm saying a prayer piece for each of you. I'm grateful to join via Zoom today, though I missed out on the fabulousness of the brand new boardroom. It looks great in the background. A huge thank you to Jeremy and Jackie for all of your accommodations and that you're able to reach board members wherever they are and make sure that they're engaged. I appreciate your work. Thank you, President Guskowitz. The investiture people have already said it was awesome. I'm really, really happy about that bus tour that you've been talking about since before you got here and the success with that. And thank you for taking time to spend some moments with MSUBA last weekend. Your presence demonstrated a commitment to a consistently faithful group of alum and our current Black students who will potentially join them. Your kicks were a big hit at the sneaker ball. People raved about this, and you lit up the awards brunch. And congratulations to Soror, Dr. Shani, and Kim, who are distinguished and honored alum. I just thank you, President Guskowitz, for your continued pursuit of excellence for Black Spartans. We have a long, long, long way to go, and I look forward to making significant progress with you and your team for improved outcomes for Black students. They are the tide that lifts all boats. When we get it right for them, everyone wins. A small Spartan student population has been experiencing gradual, incremental, yet insufficient success. I'm relieved to hear about the president's plan for our MSU students, and especially happy to hear about the launch of the new Native American Tuition Advantage program at the Investiture. This program is an expansion of the existing Spartan Tuition Advantage and is a big step toward making college more accessible for everyone. With this new initiative, students from any state in the United States or from Canada who meet the tribal affiliation requirements will qualify for in-state tuition. It's a big deal. And we do need to make sure that we're servicing that critical population and the citizens of our state in that way. Beyond that, they'll also be eligible to for extra support through the Spartan Tuition Advantage. This program is not just about financial support. It's a commitment to equity and inclusion, and most importantly, justice. Though this year's class reflects dedication to diversity, which is a big deal in the day and age that we're in, with students of color representing 27.8% of the incoming cohort, enriching the Spartan experience with diverse perspectives is not enough. When Spartans arrive on campus with diverse backgrounds, bringing different experiences, ways of knowing, and varying needs, they must feel that MSU is a place of safety, belonging, acceptance, and protection. Bringing students from across the state, the nation, and the world is our honor. It's also an honor that comes with great responsibility, investment in support, academic, mental, emotional, representative faculty and staff, and substantive, substantial education for every person on campus around RVSM, intolerance, and racial violence are necessary. MSU is the state's university. With this diverse class, we have an opportunity to rise to the call to be a beacon of bright green light of hope, goodwill, equity, inclusion, and most importantly, justice for all other universities to emulate. As a land-grant institution, we're accountable. As the best in the state, we're equipped. I look forward to future reports of transformative change to all of higher ed, patterned and pioneered here at MSU. Go Green.
Thank you, Trustee Vassar. President Guskowitz, we'll now move on to public comment if we can. So slightly altered boardroom, slightly altered visual timer for your enjoyment this morning, but same rules apply. So each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Again, given the extensive list of public speakers today, we really do ask that you not exceed your allotted time. Note that persons scheduled to speak may not cede all or part of their time to other individuals or read statements on their behalf. We will now hear from Missy Chola, followed by Victor Rodriguez Pereira. Missy, are you with us? Good morning, Missy.
Okay, so we just listened to an entire presentation on how the mental health of your students is struggling at the moment, so I heavily advise you to please listen to me as I say this. I stand before you today, not just as a representative of the Black Students Alliance, but as a voice of the many students across campus who are exhausted by the reoccurring cycle of harm, silence, and empty promises. From the mishandling of the Nassar case to the repeated vandalism and hate targeting marginalized communities, they reflect a profound systemic issue embedded with this institution. Time after time, students have come forward expressing their fears and concerns and showing up to these meetings only to receive vague, incomplete responses and a lack of meaningful action. We are exhausted, And when I say we're tired, I don't just mean physically, I mean mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We're tired of the disrespect, tired of the constant microaggressions, tired of the harassment, and especially tired of being told that our activism is performative, that we're too much, and that we're not doing enough. The Black Students Alliance is the foundation of the Black community on this campus. And if you undermine us, what you're saying is that Black students don't matter. The Black Students Alliance isn't just a name, it's a departmental organization, and it's not just us at the center, it's our entire community. Our affiliates are the ones pushing this movement forward alongside us, and they deserve their respect. We don't stand alone. Whether it's our weekly general body meetings that bring together over 100 students, or a cookout with over 700 people showing up in full force, that's not just us. That's our family, and that's our community. Every week, BSA gives about $300 to $500 to our affiliate organizations, supporting them as they continue to elevate Black voices, Black culture, and our power. These aren't just numbers. We invest in our community and show up for each other in ways that administration never has. Whether it's cultural events, academic initiatives, or spaces to be, we make a difference. And while we're working, building, and organizing, we're also having the required conversations to make our goals a reality. We're fighting for the return of Black mentoring programs, pushing to bring back the caucuses, and advocating for increased funding for our community. We're doing the work you all neglected for far too long, all while balancing classes, jobs, and life. And yet, despite everything we do, the people over us still dare to treat us as if we do not belong. Michigan State University Board of Trustees, hear us clearly. How does this institution plan to achieve equity by 2030 when there remains a 21% gap between Black and white students' graduation rates? Well, it's quite simple. Genuinely supporting the Black Students Alliance, supporting your Black students, is a critical first step to achieving equity. We are immediate, tangible actions. Number one, we demand complete transparency on all ongoing investigations into hate crimes and incidents affecting marginalized and minoritized students. We deserve to know how those responsible will be held accountable. Number two, we demand real, substantive resources for Black students, Indigenous students, survivors, and all marginalized groups on this campus. Resources that go beyond symbolic gestures. I'm almost done. Number three, we demand a firm commitment from this board to push for genuine policy changes. Promises alone are never enough. We need clear, genuine updates on this university's actions and progressive direction to prevent future incidents. Finally, let me be clear. We're not asking for permission to exist. We are demanding justice. BSA will keep organizing, we will keep fighting, and we will not back down until we see tangible, transformative change. This university belongs to all of us, and we will not rest until that truth becomes a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Missy. Our next speaker is Victor Rodriguez Pereira, followed by Mary Donaldson. Victor, good morning.
Morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Victor, and I am the president of the Union of Non-Tenure Track Faculty at. I want to thank you for the opportunity to express our support for the MSU Extension faculty's right to union recognition. The last time I addressed this body was on June 28th of this year, when I thanked you for your 2021 resolution urging for neutrality in all union organizing efforts on campus. So today, I wanted to give everyone a report of the progress that we've made in the last few months. Number one, nothing. That pretty much sums it up, really. Our negotiations with MSU administrators have not moved much, progressing only so slightly every couple of months, because as we all know, MSU administrators are oddly inventive, finding new ways to delay the inevitable. And I say the inevitable because at this point, as you will hear today, extension faculty are growing impatient, like the rest of us at UNTF, like our colleagues in the tenure system and other unions on campus that are facing the same union-busting obstacles by MSU administrators. And let's not pretend. This is precisely what MSU wants. They're counting that we get tired, that we drop it, and that extension faculty goes back to the hundreds of communities they serve across our state, where they help keep alive the land-grant mission upon which this university is founded, only to get the short end of the stick. Stagnant salaries, inconsistent working conditions, no job security, and problems that arise in the absence of collective representation. So where do we go from here? Because we've done everything. We followed all labor laws to the letter. Extension faculty has done an incredible work for years now, educating each other on their democratic right to union recognition. The American Federation of Teachers has helped us to negotiate in good faith with administrators that can't give us the time of the day. What else? UNTF has addressed all offices on campus that we could talk to. We've asked for your support, that of the Office of the Provost, HR. Am I missing someone? What else? MSU administrators pushed us to an unnecessary arbitration process that we didn't want to go through, which MSU predictably lost. So what's next? I don't know. We really wanted to work things out as a team, but that path seems pretty unattainable as day goes by. But I do know two things, and this is not so much for you, but for those anti-union administrators, deans, and chairs that I'm sure are listening right now. Number one, we will try to continue negotiating in good faith because MSU Extension faculty deserves the dignity of a collective voice on campus. They are the face of this university in all communities from Jackson to Marquette and everywhere in between. Second, our patience has a limit, and that limit is today. We've already laid all cards on the table. It's your move now, but we're not playing. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Mary Donaldson, followed by Beth Clawson. Mary, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. I am a food safety educator with MSU Extension, and I work in Hillsdale, Lenawee, Monroe, Washtenaw, and Livingston County. Today I'm speaking on regarding the MSU Extension unionizing efforts. I have worked for MSU Extension for nearly 13 years, building community partnerships and providing nutrition and food safety education. This year alone, I have provided 2,500 individual direct education. I've provided that education to 2,500 individuals. So my outreach has grown to more than 42,000 individuals in Michigan and throughout the U.S. You know, what I love about my job is being able to provide food safety and emergency preparedness education to consumers to prevent foodborne illness for themselves and their families. I'm also proud to support public health by certifying food handlers who work in restaurants, childcare centers, food pantries, university dining halls, and also food entrepreneurs. It is also very fulfilling to work with dedicated and creative colleagues who are passionate about what they do in these 83 counties in Michigan. Yet, I have seen many of these colleagues leave MSU Extension due to inconsistent cost of living adjustments and merit raises. Also, they have left because of ambiguous expectations and criteria for annual job evaluations. The largest class of employees are SNAP Ed nutrition instructors, and SNAP is the federal food program, formerly known as food stamps. These employees teach nutrition in community settings to individuals with an income lower than 185% of the national poverty level. The salaries for the employees, these nutrition employees, are lower than the 185% poverty rate for a family of two. So I'm asking our president and board of trustees to please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on the Board of Trustees neutrality resolution and recognize our union. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Our next speaker is Beth Clawson, followed by Jeremy Jubenville. Beth, good morning.
As of November 1, 2020, 23% of non-exempt higher education employees were paid below $15 per hour. This isn't just a number. It reflects real lives and challenges faced daily by our educators. Good morning. I'm Beth Clawson. I am a statewide Michigan State University Extension educator. Today, I want to talk to you about a pressing issue not just affecting me, but many of our dedicated Extension educators in MSU. I want to express my gratitude for all the work that you do and have done in living up to the standards put forth in the university's mission statement. I represent the advancing outreach, engagement, and economic development activities for a better quality of life part of that mission statement. I am in the MSU Extension office in Kalamazoo County. I began my career with MSU and MSU Extension in 2001. During my career, I have served in leadership roles. I have served on state and national boards and executive committees. I have had the honor of being the recipient of professional and career awards. During my career, I have seen small and large organizational changes in Extension and personally experienced three wage compression cycles. Despite my dedication and service, I have faced significant challenges regarding compensation. Regardless of my repeated requests for equitable wages, I faced consistent denials. I cited a $4,000 counterpart new hire salary disparity. Being grossly underpaid is clear. The message, it wasn't in the budget. Consistent equitable wages do not exist in MSU Extension. A recent 4-H educator in my office has left his position purely because he did not earn enough to afford to live independently. This is happening to me. This is happening to others. It is a wage disparity that impacts job satisfaction becomes a reflection to the community. It is no surprise that when union talks came around, suddenly wage increases and compensations and raises occurred. I did receive a substantial wage increase. Astonishingly, the next year, I still qualified for the full 100% compression raise. Bargaining power through union contract would have corrected this injustice long before. And this is why I'm here. I am here today to raise your awareness about the slow implementation of the union for non-tenured faculty for Extension educators. To date, we see no movement in HR to put this agreement in place. I formally request an investigation into why there appears to be an invisible barrier to this enactment. Investing in MSU Extension educators is not just an obligation. It is essential for the growth and vitality of the communities we serve. I urge you to please prioritize our well-being and support the timely implementation of our union. And thank you for your attention to this critical matter.
Thank you, Beth. Our next speaker is Jeremy Jubenville, followed by Cheyenne Sloan.
Good morning. Thank you very much. My name is Jeremy. I am a floriculture agent with Michigan State University Extension. In my job, I work primarily with commercial flower growers over 7 counties, Southwest Michigan. As you know, MSU Extension is an organization with over 400 frontline workers like me that fulfill a critical part of the land grant mission. And while there is a whole lot to love about Extension, it's not perfect. We have expressed our concerns to our managers for years, and we still have not seen the change that we need to see. So I ask you, what happens in an organization that is unwilling to change, that is unwilling to adapt to the needs of its workers? As leaders in your own communities, you know what happens. you lose people. And not just any people, people that are among the best and the brightest, colleagues we care about, friends, kind, hardworking, mission-oriented people who would have stayed if the organization would have just listened. The people you see here care so much about MSU Extension that they are willing to stay and do the hard work to make that change happen, to make Extension and Michigan State University better for everyone. We believe that a union is the best way to facilitate those changes. In the resolution, you recognize the fundamental right of MSU employees to form unions and ensure the cooperation of the university in recognition of collective bargaining units. Human resources has been anything but cooperative. In fact, they've taken every opportunity to delay the process, ignoring our correspondence, wasting our time and the university's money on spurious arbitration. When we asked for a card check, it took 6 months to get an employee list. 6 months for a list. Does that sound like cooperation to you? Now, despite all that, we have played along with our games, as Victor said. We have been doing this as an act of good faith and to demonstrate that we are very interested in a solutions-oriented approach. Human Resources has taken those gestures and they have thrown it back in our face. Delay tactics are union-busting tactics. We are exercising our fundamental right as MSU employees to form unions and bargain collectively. By using union-busting tactics, Human Resources is actively trying to deny us of that right. What they are doing is in direct conflict of your resolution in both spirit and in action, and it is intentional. Please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on your neutrality resolution and recognize our union. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Kelly. All right, next speaking is Sam Sloan, followed by Anna Elden-Brady. Chan, good morning.
Good morning. So, hi, everyone. My name is Cheyenne Sloan, and I work for Michigan State Extension as the blueberry and small fruit educator for Southwest Michigan. In case you didn't know what a small fruit is, it's anything that doesn't grow on a tree. To be honest, this is my dream job. I did my undergraduate degree right here at Michigan State with the ultimate goal of working in Extension at Michigan State University someday. In fact, if you look me up on the MSU website, one of the first articles I was featured in reads, Cheyenne studies horticulture so as to have a career as an Extension educator. And here I am today, living the dream. When I got this job in 2021, I was beyond excited. Not only did I get to come home to Michigan, but I also got to work for my alma mater and be a part of what I truly believe is one of the most amazing organizations that exist. Cooperative Extension is awesome, and I'm so lucky to be a part of it and work with all of these really wonderful, amazing people who are equally as passionate and excited about their individual work. I want to spend the rest of my career working for Michigan State Extension, doing what I love and helping make a difference in my community. But as the cost of living, tuition, and salaries on campus have all increased, Extension has unfortunately been left behind. We are a critical pillar of the university's land-grant mission. We are in Michigan too, but we can't retain the passionate and talented educators we bring in because we just really can't make ends meet. And that is why I'm here to ask you all to instruct Human Resources to stop stalling your union recognition. A strong union means a strong Extension program and an even stronger Michigan State University. Thank you.
Anna, well, thank you, Cheyenne, I should say. Anna, you are our next speaker, followed by Barcelin Judd. Good morning, Anna.
Hello. My name is Anna L. Elden-Brady. My honorific is Mix, and I'm a former employee of MSU Extension from the proud, union-strong city of Muskegon. I am here today to advocate for my former colleagues, my friends, in solidarity. We started this process, to borrow a motto from 4-H, to make the best better. Extension staff are incredible people. They are engaged in cutting-edge research and outreach. Their innovative programs leading the nation to more inclusive access to information that elevates families and communities. As 4-H staff, I saw my fellow workers create clubs that brought in youth who would have otherwise... I apologize, I'm not feeling well right now. I need to sit down, staff. I'm sorry. I feel dizzy. Oi.
We love it.
I cannot continue at this moment, I don't think. Thank you. I'll try to carry on without passing out. As 4-H staff, I saw my fellow workers create clubs that brought in youth who would have otherwise never thought that 4-H was a place for them, and saw this innovation inspire other states to replicate these programs. I've seen firsthand the leadership of my colleagues across institutes recognized nationally for their creativity and drive. And I am proud to have worked alongside them, both for my recent 5-year stretch and for the 3 years that started it all, from 2010 to 2012, when I worked on the team that published the nationally recognized Ready to Go volunteer training curriculum. These colleagues became friends and made me feel personally and professionally seen, even when my lived experience was their learning curve. I collaborated with colleagues who had far more formal education, who trusted that I could keep up. Cooperative extension is something special. And that's why we decided to unionize. With all this creativity, resourcefulness, and a deep dedication to truly being open to all, we still were seeing systemic gaps that could not be solved by our own sheer grit. Unionizing is the first step in building solutions we can all throw from management on down. I believe that the security that a union contract brings will create an environment where we don't see the high turnover across institutes that can undermine the long-term community partnerships that cooperative extension depends on to thrive, whether in agricultural outreach, land use initiatives, community food systems development, local and tribal government partnerships, health and nutrition education programs, family and early childhood education outreach, 4-H clubs, and so many other things I haven't highlighted. We need extension staff to feel like they have a career here. I believe a union can help us achieve that end. I also believe that an injury to one is an injury to all. If our lowest paid extension colleagues aren't thriving, we all have work to do, and that can happen at the bargaining table. I believe in MSU Extension and these unionizing efforts so much that I came back here today despite not being staff any longer. I urge the Board of Trustees to stand by the neutrality agreement and to remove the barriers that have arisen in the path of this collective effort. Please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on this commitment to neutrality and recognize this union. Thank you, and thank you for this accommodation.
Thank you, Anna. Our next speaker is Baslin Judd, followed by Kerry Grishaber. Baslin, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Baslin Judd. I'm a consumer horticulture educator with MSU Extension. I'm housed in the Flint office. If you don't know what my job title means, it means I'm a huge plant nerd and I like to work with the general public. So that's consumer horticulture in a nutshell. Extension is about connecting communities as much as public education. I came to Extension because I'm passionate about public service and know the critical role that Extension played for my family. I've even benefited from Extension first-time homeowner classes, 4-H programming, and agricultural education. I believe in Extension's support of our communities through agriculture, youth, health, and financial programming. For years, MSU Extension has suffered from significant turnover, and I believe that union representation can help with this issue by providing consistent cost of living adjustments, transparent job evaluation processes, and a compensation structure that acknowledges years of service and experience. Structured hiring and promotion practices that are also clear and not based on favoritism. Correcting these issues that have continued for decades will allow MSU Extension to recruit and retain diverse and skilled professionals. It allows educators like myself to focus on their passion of education and service instead of worrying about how we're going to make our ends meet and pay our bills. It will allow us to pursue lifelong careers of service and extension. We've lost too many employees because of these issues. The revolving door of staff not only slows our work, but it disrupts the community and the continuity of service in those communities. President and trustees, our card signatures show that the majority of extension workers support our unionizing effort. This has not changed over the last 11 months of stalling by human resources. Supporting this union effort is not just a matter of policy, It's a reflection of our commitment to the highest ethical and academic standards and to transparent decision-making and accountable governance. As outlined in the MSU mission and value statement, I want to call your attention to a specific section of the MSU mission and value statement. It reads, "As an institution of higher learning, Michigan State University is committed to the highest ethical and academic standards. As a public institution, we are committed to transparent decision-making and accountable governance. As a community, we commit to live these values. Please hold human resources accountable and assure that they are living these values. You can prove that these are more than just pretty words. Please do so by instructing them to follow your neutrality resolution and recognize our union. Thank you."
Rosalind, thank you. Our next speaker is Carrie Grisaber, followed by Liz Duran. Carrie, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Grisaber. I'm a finance and ownership educator with MSU Extension, housed in Washtenaw County. I serve 7 counties total. I love working for Extension. I utilize the resources of this great institution to educate my community on life-changing topics. Many community members have little to no access to this information otherwise. I and all my Extension colleagues serve hardworking Michiganders who are no stranger to uncertain financial futures and changing times. Our state is built on the backbone of labor that keeps this country running. On a daily basis, I teach our community how to advocate for a strong future for their families. This is why I support forming our union. Fostering a resilient financial future with insured rights will not only strengthen the lives of our Extension staff, who can be counted amongst those hardworking Michiganders, but will create a steadfast example for our community members. We seek to be confident in our futures so that we can make others confident in theirs. As with all community-based workers, our impact is most purposeful and significant to the people we serve when we are able to dig deep and remain in our roles for extended periods, building trust and relationships over time. The guaranteed protections of our union will make this possible for many of us. We support our union not out of greed or contempt, but a desire to maintain what drew us to this organization and to advocate for what will allow our families to thrive and continue our important work with MSU Extension. President and trustees, please do your part in supporting our vital, invaluable work of creating a stronger Michigan and instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on your neutrality resolution and recognize our union. Thank you for your time.
Carrie, thank you very much. Liz Duran, you are our next speaker, followed by Eric Altman. Liz, good morning.
Good morning. I, like my fellow colleagues, am a 4-H MSU Extension employee. I have been for the last 12 and a half years a 4-H program coordinator in Warren. Warren is the third largest city in the state. I bring 4-H educational opportunities to students who probably never would have had that. My job was not supposed to be a lifelong career like many of my predecessors here. I actually fell into the work, and it was supposed to be a job on the way to another job, and I fell in love with the work and the people I work with. I truly, Extension was a part of my life when I was a dairy farmer's wife, and I truly believe in what they do for our communities. I'm asking today that you, President and trustees, to please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on the Board of Trustees neutrality resolution and recognize our union. I have seen too many talented, passionate people have to make the painful decision to leave our organization. My first 3 years in the organization, I had 7 partners in my role and 4 supervisors. And the only reason they left was the lack of transparency, the low wages, and the favoritism. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Altman, you're our next speaker, followed by Tyler Wilkst. Eric, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to address the board. My name is Eric Altman. I'm a tenure stream faculty member in the Department of Psychology. I would like to note first that the motion made by Trustee Pierce concerning the five-year capital plan, I believe, was seconded but not voted upon. And the board may wish to consult with council as to whether this is true, and if so, how to proceed. I am here today to urge the board again to amend its policy concerning the proposal for a tenure stream faculty union. The current policy is to recognize a union based on results of a card check process. This process is not democratic because it lets other people monitor how you vote, including people who have power over your future here at MSU. A tenured faculty member can approach an untenured faculty member and strongly encourage them to sign a union card and then watch them while they do so. This is a coercive situation, and it means that support for the union based on card check is overstated. There is a role for card check, certainly, but it's the same role that petitions played in your elections, which is to qualify to get on the ballot. None of us, neither you as elected officials nor we as voters, would accept the validity of an election carried out without a secret ballot. In fact, we are in the midst of an election right now in which people are working very hard to protect the right to vote. If you venture downtown East Lansing, you will see that there are concrete barriers around City Hall that are not there the rest of the year. Those are there to protect election workers and voters. The president and board members at this meeting have encouraged the campus to vote appropriately, in my view. And yet the board's policy for faculty is to replace a secret ballot with a public ballot so that others can monitor whether we vote according to their wishes. This is ironic, I believe, against the backdrop of the current election. It's also not fair to faculty, and it's not consistent with our values as a community or the mission of the university. The other key part of a democratic process is open discussion of the issues, which we can't have with the gag order the board has placed on management. I need to hear from my chair and my dean how they think a union will affect the functioning of their units, because those are also my units. That's where I work. These are community members who have an important perspective to share, and they deserve to be heard, and the rest of us deserve to be able to hear them. We should all want a democratic process because democracy confers legitimacy, and everybody who is not here today, which is the large majority of us, will recognize that allowing a democratic process is the right call. Thank you.
Thank you. Our speaker is Tyler Oaks, followed by Staffis Pauls. Tyler, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you. Yes, hello. My name is Tyler Oaks, and I'm a government and community vitality educator with MSU Extension, based out of our Van Buren County offices, living in beautiful Cass County. In that role, I serve Southwest Michigan, and I advance our land-grant mission by providing education, outreach, and support to Michigan's local government, elected and appointed officials, staff, and residents. As elected officials yourselves, I am sure you can appreciate the challenges and complexities of serving in government. My work with Extension helps folks navigate those complexities and build their knowledge, skills, and confidence as they step up to serve the public good for their local communities. I'm taking the day off from that important work today, though, to talk to you about something else, helping my coworkers in MSU Extension form a labor union so we can all do our jobs better. I'm an elected official, too. I serve on my local school board, and in that role, I have the great pleasure to work alongside two phenomenal unions that represent our dedicated staff. I've seen firsthand how collective bargaining can help both attract and retain talented staff by establishing regular and transparent salary increases, setting clear and fair processes around workplace issues, and securing multi-year contracts that remove the annual contract stress, allowing staff to focus on what really matters here, the work. Those same benefits could be realized by MSU Extension. An extension union will give the organization that I truly love working for another pull factor to bring in and keep amazing staff like those you are hearing from today. President and trustees, please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to follow through on your neutrality resolution and recognize our union. Thank you.
All Tyler, thank you so much. Our next speaker is Stathis Pauls, followed by Ning Shea. Stathis, good morning.
Good morning. First, I'd like to provide my condolences to Trustee Deneau, and thank you for being here through that, and I hope you take some time for yourself after this. My name is Stathis Pauls. I, as along with many of my colleagues here, work for Michigan State University Extension. I am the site manager and programs coordinator for the Detroit Partnership for Food Learning and Innovation. We are Michigan State University's first, foremost, and only urban agriculture research, education, and community center in Northwest Detroit. You may have seen us as the top article in MSU Today a few weeks ago or on Channel 4 last week. So when I say that MSU Extension's presence is extremely important, I truly mean it. I love what I do. I love my colleagues, and I love my city of Detroit. Detroit is the world capital of urban agriculture, and MSU's presence in Detroit cannot be understated, is crucial, and is welcomed by the community. Countless times I will be at work, I will have fellow farmers who I have cultivated relationships with over the last decade stop in and say, thank you for being here, and it makes us trust the university more to have people on the ground in the city. Unsurprisingly, I also love my mother, a DPSCD teacher with 25 years of experience, all of which have been as an actor of the Detroit tradition of teaching. My colleagues have stated our concerns and our issues, so I will spare you. What I'd like to say, however, is that I wholeheartedly believe that working in a unionized position enshrines and expands on the wonderful opportunities, benefits, and pride in working for MSU. I encourage myself on 3 years, future extension employees to turn these positions into careers. I would like to carry on the legacy of my mother by educating the public for Detroit for the next quarter century like she has. So when, not if, this passes, MSU will also stand to gain from this. Will make the employee-employer relationship much better. Will improve on our pretty bad retention rates, and will catalyze our pride in representing the Spartan Head in Michigan and abroad. So, in closing, I ask President and Board of Trustees, please instruct the Office of Employee Relations to honor the resolution of neutrality that you have passed, and to recognize our union. Thank you.
Thank you, Stathis. Ning Shea is our next speaker, followed by Mark Breedlove. Ning, good morning.
Morning. My name is Ning Shea. I am associate professor in the Department of Sociology. I'm also a member of the Union of Tenure System Faculty. While I'm addressing the board here today, I also want to honor the board's, I want to acknowledge that the university president has the authority to honor the board's resolution that UTSF members have continued to raise in these meetings. So President Guskowitz, I understand that your job is a very difficult one, but one immediate way to make it less difficult is to listen to your faculty, honor the Board of Trustees neutrality resolution, and recognize the MSU Extension Union as part of UNTF and my union, UTSF. This will save the university money by cutting the budget spent on a notorious union busting law firm that is helping admin fight the will of the faculty, the majority of whom want a tenure system faculty union. It will also help repair broken relationships on campus, including a widespread distrust in the MSU administration. To run a large public university successfully, you need to have a cooperative and productive relationships with your faculty. The Union of Tenure System Faculty, Union of Non-Tenure Track Faculty, along with Faculty Senate, are eager to work with you and help you restore the university's reputation. But the question is, do you want to be a university president that listens to faculty and students, or one that takes away our voice We know that UTSF is inevitable. According to the most recent report by the National Center for the Study of Collective Bargaining in Higher Education and the Professions, faculty unionization has been growing linearly since 1976. According to this long-term trend, unionization in higher education will become a norm in the future. As of January 2024, faculty union representation in Michigan is 46%, ranked number 10 across the states. MSU administration's recognition of our faculty unions through a democratic card check process, as already laid out in the Board of Trustees neutrality resolution, is indeed forward-thinking and trend-setting. A protracted labor battle on campus will only do further damage to our institution's reputation. And don't you agree that recognizing and working with your faculty unions will be the best PR for MSU? Thank you.
Thank you, Ning. Our next speaker is Mark Breedlove, followed by Valerie Von Frank. Mark, good morning.
Hi there. I'm Mark Breedlove. For over 20 years now, the Barnett Rosenberg Chair of Neuroscience here at MSU. I was very pleased to see our new president's email go out to the community yesterday, encouraging democratic participation. If I have to tell you, if the rest of the administration got the memo, they've decided to ignore it because they've been behaving in a very undemocratic fashion with regards to the union of tenure system faculty. After all, it was the elected Board of Trustees that passed the resolution, the neutrality resolution, and well over half of our tenure stream faculty have signed cards declaring that they want union representation. You can't get more democratic than that. And in accordance with the laws of the state of Michigan and the neutrality resolution, what the administration should have done next was to provide to a third party the list of all the faculty so that our cards could be checked. The cards we turned in last December. Had the administration behaved in a democratic fashion, our union would be recognized already. Instead, as we've heard, they've decided to hire union-busting law firms to take up the same old tired playbook of MSU administration that brought us the Nassar and Tucker scandals. Deception, dishonesty, dissimulation. And adding to it a fourth, delay. So among disinformation, we have the provost emailing our faculty saying that, the two sides are so close, Well, that might be his opinion, but if they're so close, then why is it that the administration negotiation team routinely showed up late, like hungover frat boys? If we're so close, why is the MSU administration refusing several times to actually engage in arbitration? If you think we're so close, then arbitration should settle things. Well, it's patently obvious that the real strategy is delay. Now, that pattern began before our new president was here. And I can tell you that the 1,800 tenure system faculty are waiting to see, President Guskowitz, whether we're going to have a continuation of the same old pattern of deception. And I really think that this great public university deserves better. I hope that you will embrace transparency and honesty, and that you will instruct your staff, and they are your staff now, instruct them to start start participating in the legal card check process in good faith and recognize our union. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Valerie Von Frank, followed by Silas Robinson. Valerie, good morning.
Good morning. My printer decided to take a day off, so. We, Posse, has not spoken here since the new president took office. We were waiting to see if actions would follow words, which is all we've gotten for 6 years. Excuse me. And we believe that the new president deserves credit for the different approach we are experiencing. I hope it does not take 6 years for the other groups in this room, because I do believe that delay and the lack of transparency are institutionalized in ways that I hope the new president is beginning to address. And I will say he has opened a true dialogue with us that gives us cautious hope for the first time since 2016. He sincerely apologized to survivors for institutional failures, unlike MSU's hard former stance that it was only one bad man and nothing that the institution did or didn't do. Thank you to Dennis Deno for leading a real and comprehensive search that led to this change despite other board members' efforts to tank the search by leaking information. We want to thank Stephen Fletcher for regularly meeting with us to make sure that the Healing Fund now is working for survivors. And most of all, we want to recognize Laura Ruggles, the new head of OCR, for her responsiveness and her willingness to listen to survivors' needs. We look forward to that continued conversation. However, we feel the need to say to this board that so many of the old issues still show up in this room, and if the governor elects to remove one or two of you, all of you should be removed. The MSU of old still exists, and it's sitting around this table. Having attended or Zoomed every board meeting for the last 6 years, filed numerous Freedom of Information Act requests, read thousands of pages of documents and reports, and spoken with many board observers, we know there are far more serious transgressions occurring across this board beyond what some members have tried to trump up for the last year. We will be sending a letter of potential violations of Higher Learning Commission accreditation standards, the board code of conduct, policies, and bylaws, along with relevant materials to the university. I'll try to get through one or two highlights. We learned from the release of the Nassar documents that board members routinely attempt to avoid subjecting their university correspondence to the legal standards of the Freedom of Information Act by using private rather than university email accounts, and this has been going on for decades. Renee Kanacki did not offer any evidence to a news outlet that questioned whether she is legitimately a Michigan resident. Residency is required under state law to serve on this board. This is not an agreement or a code. This is state law. I'm going to give you a couple of more points since other people have done this. Brianna Scott said she had a personal conversation with the state attorney general about the secret Nassar documents and represented the board's position as not wanting to release that information. That is a policy violation. Four board members, Renee Kanacki, Diane Byram, Kelly Tebay, and Brianna Scott, colluded with the former chair of the Faculty Senate to attack their fellow board members, according to emails we recently reviewed. Jack Lipton's attorney even said to the media, "Since we haven't heard anything from the governor in so long, we were hoping for a creative solution through the court system that could put pressure on the university to make this right decision."
Valerie, just because we have gone sort of okay.
A bit, okay. Let me just conclude.
Yeah, please.
Let's all read the university's mission statement, board policies, and codes of ethics and conduct, and Higher Learning Commission standards, and apply these equally to every one of you sitting there. Then we can say who can represent this university.
Our next speaker is Silas Robinson, followed by Tracy Jefferson. Silas, are you with us? Okay. Our next speaker is Tracy Jefferson, followed by Nassim Saeed. Tracy, are you with us? Okay. Nassim Saeed, are you with us? Good morning. And then our next speaker after Nassim will be Isabella Tillotson. So, Nassim, please proceed.
Morning. So, as it has been stated in the past, there are no words in the dictionary to truly define the devastating reality of what's happening in Gaza and Palestine. As a Palestinian, it deeply saddens me to see how willingly you endorse the Zionist narrative, seemingly without considering the broader moral narrative or moral implication. While I do not condone any violence in any form, I cannot ignore how the world constantly refers back to October 7th as if the date alone justifies the suffering and the devastation that has followed. The Zionist narrative downplays decades of injustice, illegal settlements, displacement of Palestinian people from their homeland since 1948, annexation of land, and the destruction of over 500 villages only in 1948, and relentless bombing of Gaza since 2006. This narrative suggests that attack on October 7th cannot be justified, despite the long history of oppression. And yet, that same narrative uses October 7th to justify for the mass killing of thousands of people and the wiping out of an entire population and city. And how does that make sense to you? October 7th has been used to justify the killing of over 175 journalists who were supposedly protected by their blue vests. It has been used to justify the rape of innocent women, pregnant innocent women, whose only dreams were to raise a family. And this is a plea to all of those who claim to champion women's rights in this room. It has been justified, it has justified the murder of doctors, that the very people who hail as the heroes in our time. It has been used to justify the kidnapping of Palestinians, falsely labeling them as prisoners. And some of them are not even over the age of 18. It has been used to justify killings, destructions, and it has been used to justify the killing of a long list of children. It has been used to justify the brutal killing of a 10-year-old Hind Rajab, whose car was riddled with over 300 bullets fired from a tank just 20 meters away. Now imagine that for a second. You're inside of your car, and 300 bullets fired at your car. As a Palestinian student, I have never received any reassurance or support from this university to ensure that my family is okay. I have not seen any actions or address the concerns of Palestinians. I lied about the sports, stating that the president himself has went to a vigil where there's proof that there was no existence of him. Excuse me. So today I ask you to put aside your status. I ask you to put aside your positions. I ask you to put aside anything that holds you to talk about the truth. And because in the future, you will no longer be president and you will no longer be a trustee. You will be replaced. And your legacy, basically, to conclude, as Palestinians, we ask you to sit down with us. President, look me in the eye right now. President, look me in the eye right now and tell us that you want to sit down with us to resolve this issue. Please, because we are hurt, and it has been over a year. Thank you.
Move on. Thank you. Our next speaker is Isabella Tillotson, followed by Owen Connolly. Isabella, are you with us? Isabella, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, good afternoon. It is just noon.
Yes. It's been going for a while. Ladies and gentlemen of the board, I have come here today to call on you to divest from the State of Israel bond, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and Northrop Grumman, investments which total over $1.3 million. I am also calling on you to divest from all equities and firms like BlackRock and Fidelity who invest in these same weapons manufacturers. As citizens of this country, you are bound by the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. Article 2 of the Genocide Convention defines genocide as the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, racial, ethnical, or religious group. Numerous scholars of international law consider Israel's aggression in Palestine to fit this definition. Article 3 of the Genocide Convention enumerates punishable acts, including complicity. Complicity in genocide involves intentional participation, but not necessarily an intention to do harm, only knowledge of foreseeable harmful effects. Your intentional investment in arms manufacturing, your knowledge of the purpose of those arms, and your refusal to divest from these funds makes you complicit in genocide. You are also bound by your roles as chairpeople of this board to make informed and socially conscious investments. As such, divestment from these funds is your responsibility to the people you serve. Simply put, your refusal to divest supports a state in violation of international law, and blood is on your hands. Article 4 of the Genocide Convention delineates that persons, including constitutionally responsible rulers,
public officials or private individuals shall be punished for violations. While you can rest assured that you will never be tried for your crimes, I must express to you that until you divest, you sit before me as criminals in violation of the Genocide Convention. For over a year now, this board has ignored and dismissed students like me who beseech you to divest. Your continued investments and blatant refusal of our demands facilitates the oppression, murder, and genocide of the Palestinian people, including our own community members. Tariq Tabet, an MSU fellow, and 15 of his family members were murdered in the genocide you help fund. How do you reconcile that? We have heard your message clearly. Michigan State University will stand for injustice, hate, and genocide as long as it remains profitable to do so. I would like to remind you not only of your responsibilities to the people whom you serve and the institution you represent, but your human responsibility to the world in which we live. If you cannot be moved by the death of countless men, women, and children, at least understand that you are in violation of laws by which you are bound. Listen to me clearly and know that I mean what I say. We will not stop fighting you until you divest. No justice, no peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabella. Our next speaker is Owen Connolly, followed by Saba Syed. Owen, good morning.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees, as representative of the student body gathered here today, I have come to say that we do not feel we are adequately represented by the board and its members. We have repeatedly called for a divestment over the past year, and in the face of a genocide, we believe this would be an obvious decision. Instead, we have been met with ignorance, outright lies, deception, and antipathy. You run away from us when we cause a little too much noise, and canine units are dispatched to our quietest and most solemn events. For this reason, my peers and I will be walking out. Let it be known that this is not a sign of a loss of hope, nor does it mean that we have given up. It is instead a demonstration of strength and passion amongst ourselves, the community we've built, and the student body at large. As we rise and walk out the door, let it represent the deep disappointment we feel towards the governing body of our university and how it refuses to find satisfying solutions to our issues. Let it show the current divide that exists between students and board as attacks on our people on and off campus continue without the proper response from the university. May it be symbolic of the lack of student input that is rampant on this campus. Let it show that the greatest issue amongst the students of MSU right now is the status of our investments and ties with current genocide. And finally, let it show that we are one people, united, and we are not easily denied, disheartened, or defeated. We demand that this board and President Koskiewicz immediately rescind their previous statements from the April board meeting, declaring that under no circumstances will MSU divest. This is unacceptable, and it is time that MSU puts divestment back on the table and begins to negotiate with the student body. While we will not be here in this room, where our pleas fall on deaf ears, we will be occupying the Hanna Administration Building. It is here that we will make our voices heard to the students, our peers, and the people that you have taken advantage of. We will be holding educationals for all those interested in our cause and our demands. We will spend our time celebrating who we are as Michigan State students, fighting for what we believe is right, while continuing to remember and honor the lives and memories of those we have lost. I extend the invites to any and all students, faculty, and members of the board to join us in this show of support. For all students joining us today, we implore you to walk out with your heads held high, knowing that you are powerful, you are respected, and you have a place in this university that deserves to be properly acknowledged. For all adjacent members of the community, including campus workers, professors, and others, we ask that you join us as well. Whether your participation is in walking out with us or in shortly coming through our occupation to learn about our cause and our beliefs, every little bit counts. We appreciate what you have done to help our community throughout our time on campus, and we know that you know what justice realized should look like. To the board directly, despite your antagonism and apathy, we extend the invitation to you most of all. Take this opportunity we are giving you to talk to us, be with us in community, and discuss a true pathway to divestment. Rectify the damage you've caused by improperly handling the several incidents of hate and prejudice that have occurred on campus over the course of the last year. Let's come to a consensus that benefits us, the students you claim to represent, yourselves, and the many families, men, women, and children that are being consumed by the genocide in Palestine. When the time comes and you are ready for a mature conversation, you can come talk to us. Until then, we will make our voices heard across campus, and we will work to inspire the change this university needs. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Our next speaker is Saba Syed, followed by Brenda Tracy. Saba, good morning. Hi. Good afternoon, sorry.
I think they're saying disclose, divest, and they won't stop, or they won't stop. I think that's what it is, just for anyone who didn't hear it. Hi, everyone. Long time no see. I really didn't want to have to come back here. Genuinely, I've been enjoying my life being a normal, like, Palestinian. I know on the news right now it does seem pretty bad for us, but actually, I did want to say that life does continue in Palestine and Gaza and Lebanon. Even with, I know it's crazy, even with the genocide and constant bombing going on, people still exist. And over the past year, as I've gotten to talk to my family, and I see my aunt going to one wedding one day, then the next day has to go plan a visit for her son who was detained. It just, it really put into perspective how I can explain to you best what oppression is like and what it feels like. It's not necessarily that there is a violation of human rights. That's a common sense thing. I think we can all look at Gaza, we can all look at Lebanon, we can all look at the world, we can look at the university and see that a lot of different people are suffering, a lot of people have had loss, a lot of people are grieving, a lot of people are mourning, and you can't constantly keep having people feel the need to defend why they're emotional or why they need to mourn or why they're sad about this. And we cannot tie politics into our own human experience, because politics is constructed. It's so easy. It's such a playbook that I honestly, the other day, I was so bored. I was thinking about this in the summer, and I said, let me run for trustee, because why not? And you know what? I didn't want to do any forms or anything like that. And I said, let me do a writing campaign. And I was doodling it. And I wanted to show you guys my doodles, because I do think these meetings are long and sucky. And I hope, you know, I wanted to do something that might cheer you guys up a little bit. These are my drawings. It says Saba for Board of Trustees. There's a board here, and there's a Spartan and the trustees. And then it says reasons I want to be on the Board of Trustees. It says to prove there's nothing stronger than community. There's the community with muscles. This is you guys without muscles, the Board of Trustees and the status quo. It says POW. And I really am not planning to run for trustees because I'm not qualified for it, nor do I have the extensive years of experience that you guys have. I mean, even these drawings took me so long, and I wanted to, like, actually, like, I didn't know how I could handle it. And that just, I do somewhat understand the level of work I put does not match any effort that you guys put. But I do hope that, as you see, even as I'm not involved in any of these actions planning, that there's students, there's faculties, and there's people here that will continue to be there for one another and support it, whether that's under divestment, whether that's under any sort of thing where people may disagree with you guys. There's always going to be community. I mean, look around the room. No one's here coming to only say good job. And that would make, that leaves me slightly concerned. But I do think that this university does have a wonderful atmosphere in it. And I don't think that having a sense of community, listening to one another and learning from one another is something that won't be achievable. Sorry, I'm almost done.
We've really got to move on. I appreciate sort of...
I got you. No, okay. I won't fight you on it this time.
Thank you.
Vote for me. Just kidding, though. Okay. I don't want to be up there. Have a good day.
Thank you, Saba. I appreciate it. Our next speaker is Brenda Tracy, followed by Karen Truskowski.
Brenda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Brenda Tracy. I'm here today from Portland, Oregon. I'm not going to mince words with you. I came here today to tell you some of the ways that you have harmed me. September 10th, 2023, USA Today published a column detailing the formal... Sorry, I need a second. September 10th, 2023, USA Today published a column detailing the formal complaint I filed against then head football coach Mel Tucker for sexual harassment. I want to be very clear with all of you that I did not want to come forward. From day one, I wanted to complete the RVSM process without the input of the public. But that right was taken from me late at night while I was 3,000 miles away from my home at a baggage claim. In that moment, I was faced with a decision. Do I go public or do I allow the media storm to choose the narrative for me? Did I have the story on deck ready to go? Yes, I did. It became evident to me early on in the RVSM process that I would need to protect myself. But I shouldn't have had to protect myself from you, the trustees of Michigan State University. Former trustee Patrick O'Keefe wrote this in a text. Her actions are unprofessional and so out of bounds, it is hard to figure why she would commit such career suicide. I have been around people who have been hurt and want to hurt others or want to hurt someone just to feel good about themselves. She had plenty of outs, and she didn't want to be a victim. First, like hanging up the phone, battery went dead, got something else I need to tend to, but she didn't. I am a suspect on motivation, but I am betting she doesn't show up to the hearing or is trying to influence the process. Dr. Vassar, this message was sent to you, and you supported it by putting a heart on it. And I did show up for the hearing. Tucker did not. In the Miller Chevalier investigation, Dr. Vassar, you alleged interference with an ongoing investigation by trustees Kanaki, Jefferson, Byram, and Scott with outreach to and communication with Brenda Tracy and possibly her attorney either directly or through third parties. These allegations of collusion are also alleged in Mel Tucker's lawsuit naming this board and MSU administration, which says, upon information and belief, the administration defendants personally collaborated with Tracy and her counsel and with OIE staff to develop a factual record designed to support her false claim against the plaintiff. There is also evidence that several board members, defendants Kanaki, Jefferson, Byram, and Scott, engaged in improper and unauthorized discussions with Tracy and her counsel. These allegations are absolutely false. I have never met any of you or talked to any of you before today, and I have never colluded with anyone in OIE or this administration. After the conclusion of the Jones Day investigation, Dr. Vassar, as chair of this board, you went on the record to say that the board was exonerated in the leak of my name. But Trustee Deno, you didn't give investigators your phone to assist in ruling yourself out as being involved directly or indirectly with the leak of my name. That is not an exoneration of this board. I filed my complaint with OIE because I was sexually harassed and threatened by head football coach Mel Tucker, a man who pretended to be an ally to survivors. A man who brought me here to educate his staff and players on issues of sexual violence and misconduct prevention, and then turned around and did to me the same thing he brought me here to do. I turned to MSU for help, and in return, I was victim blamed, shamed, accused of collusion, and used as a pawn for personal agendas. You say you are a board that supports survivors. That was not my experience with you, but I absolutely believe that it should have been. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Our next speaker is Karen Truskowski, followed by Jessica Watford. Karen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. I don't want to be here today. I have spent the last 10 years
working with students at this university that have dealt with sexual assault, rape, violence. But I never made it about me. I made it about them. That's why I don't want to be here today, because it's not about me. But I have a responsibility to my client, my friend, Brenda Tracy. I've been an attorney for 25 years. I've never been accused of colluding with a board member, which, by the way, I can stand up here, I will raise my right hand and say unequivocally, I have never spoken or met or emailed or texted with anyone on this board. Kelly, we brought up in the elevator this morning. That and there's a reason for that, because it's not about me, but today it's going to have to be. I am angry, beyond angry. And for people that know me, I don't get angry. I'm a peacemaker. But I can't do it anymore. I can't be peaceful. We tried really hard to work with this university, and there's a lot of people in this room. I'm not going to point any of them out, that I have great respect for and I have great relationships with. It didn't work. Last September, on a Friday night, September 9th, I got a phone call from some local journalists who also I trust immensely, telling me that they were hearing Brenda's name and telling me where they heard it from. What was I supposed to do? Brenda never wanted to be public. She wanted this process to finish and be fair to everyone involved, including Mr. Tucker. And that was taken away, quite honestly, not only from her, but from Mr. Tucker. Now, I don't represent him, obviously, but I believe in due process and fairness for everyone. Imagine my surprise when I get a call from Alex Walters at the State News asking me about a confidential email that I submitted in confidence as a courtesy to this university because I was going to release a statement about the leak of her name. And guess what? How ironic. That memo was leaked. And what did that memo say? Brenda Tracy's name has been leaked. And then that's leaked again. Where's the trust here, people? And, you know, I sat over here for an hour and a half changing what I was going to say over and over again. And then I decided, you know what? I put it all away, and I came up here and spoke from my heart. I'm a professor. I'm a teacher. I have great respect for education. I have immense respect for this university.
Karen, we really are going to have to move on. So
oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah, please.
You get my message.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, next speaker is Jessica Whatley, followed by Abigail Rodriguez. Jessica? Okay, our next speaker is Abigail Rodriguez, followed by Drake Johnson. Good morning, Abigail.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Abigail Rodriguez, and I act as the ASMSU representative for ARCA. And if my name sounds familiar, you may have heard my name a few times in the news recently as a member of the 2024 Homecoming Court and as one of the few students who has been nominated for the Marshall and Rhodes Scholarships. I'm not saying this to brag about my accomplishments, but because I can attribute all the accomplishments I have to the experiences I have had in ARCA. ARCA stands for the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities and is one of the three residential colleges along with James Madison and Lyman Briggs. And MSU is ranked number 4 in living and learning communities like ARCA. ARCA emphasizes community engagement through liberal arts education, and unlike any other program on campus, ARCA emphasizes hands-on learning that connects our studies directly to the communities we come from and those we hope to impact. ARCA students don't just sit in classrooms.
We engage communities, create art, host events, and critically analyze how we can make a meaningful difference. This approach has prepared me to pursue my goals of advocacy, research, and service in ways that go beyond what I could gain from a traditional classroom setting. The discussions happening to merge ARCA with the College of Arts and Letters is deeply concerning to me and my peers. ARCA's small, dedicated community is integral to its success. It provides us with a close-knit environment where faculty know our names and understand our goals. This college is where students who might otherwise feel unseen at a large university like Michigan State University find a home and supportive network that encourages them to excel. As someone who has benefited tremendously from ARCA's unique approach, I am here today to urge the board to consider what is truly at stake with these discussions of a merger in progress. As these discussions of a merger progress, we risk losing a space that fosters creativity, critical thinking, and community-centered leadership. ARCA is more than just a college, it is a community, and it is a launching pad for future leaders who are driven to make a difference. Preserving ARCA does not just mean protecting a college, but a space that cultivates the values that make MSU a diverse, forward-thinking institution. I want to ask the board to not entertain any discussions or proposals made about a potential merger between the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities and the College of Arts and Letters, and instead begin the search for a permanent dean of ARCA, which we have been lacking. Thank you for your time, and I hope you will consider the voices of students, faculty, and alumni who believe ARCA's legacy and impact deserve to continue. Thank you.
Abigail, thank you very much. Drake Johnson, you are our next speaker, followed by Mike Balo. Drake, are you with us? Not seeing Drake. That moves us on to Mike Balo. Mike, good afternoon.
A very good afternoon to you as well. It's good to be here. I, too, have kind of changed my comments. You know, I had no idea what people were going to say during the meeting today. I've been here for 4 years. I think this is my 35th straight meeting, so I think I've seen things as they are. In many ways, I'm a creation of this environment. You know, I never thought I'd run for a board like MSU. But what I'd like to offer, and not only manifested in myself but in others that I see, is a change to have what we all know to be true, which is a more open, honest environment here at MSU. I've gotten to saying it's like the 95-5 principle. 95% of what goes on here is always going to be good, and we can talk about how great it is, and that's fun. But there's 5% that's going to be trouble. All institutions have a 5% that's trouble, sometimes more, sometimes less. The true test of leadership is, what do you do with that 5%? What do you do when that bullet is running at you, when something bad is happening? When the stories that we hear today happen, you know, do we hide and obfuscate, or do we deal with that as fair brokers and honestly? So I think I am hopeful. You know, one of my favorite movies is The Shawshank Redemption, and as you all know, Morgan Freeman's character has one of the best movie quotes of all time, where he talks about the value of hope. But hope is not a strategy. Hope is something that you need to support with action. And we all have a chance here. You know, I like to agree with President Guskowitz. Like, we have an election week that's upon us. You know, I hope everyone votes the whole ballot. I hope everyone prints it out and looks at it, not just as a scantron, but as something that you can analyze and figure out who supports your values. I've been at this for 4 years now. I've seen great candidates across the state of all races and religions and colors and parties. Don't ever take what someone tells you as like, this is how you should vote, or this is why you should vote, in terms of a slate or a company or anything. You're all Spartans here. We expect a lot of independent thought. Do your research. Let's be the leaders that people expect of us on the board. You know, Hemingway once said, the world is a fine place and worth fighting for. I might say the same thing about MSU. Much like the American experiment, it's never finished. Every day that we wake up and we think it's not going to be a struggle today to be better than we were yesterday is a day that we're not looking at the world in the right fashion. You know, trustees can be much maligned, but if you do your job right, it's one of the opportunities of a lifetime to work with such awesome people here on campus and around the state. You know, King once said, the arc of the moral universe bends toward justice. And I heard someone say it 2 weeks ago, and I wish I could remember who. They said, only if we help it bend. And Lincoln in his 1861 inaugural said, people need to follow the better angels of their nature. We are set up well to be much better than we have been. If we do it together with respect for each other and a respect for the truth, we're going to get there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. President Guskowitz, that concludes a public comment for this afternoon. I do want to address as sort of the comment made earlier about the vote on the State of Michigan Fiscal Year Capital Outlay Request and the five-year capital plan. I have conferred with council. We do believe that the board did vote on that particular action. So unless the board members are concerned, I think we can conclude. So.
Okay, great. Then is there a motion to adjourn? Board, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting's adjourned. Thank you all. Well,
into the area.